Oh, well, never mind the intro. That's annoying. But I admit I just walked in the door, and yeah, this is live. This is real. And they didn't have it. I didn't have time to do a fresh restart on the streaming PC. And so consequently, when I went to hit the intro music, nothing happened. So this is a cold opening. No music, no announce, no nothing. It's just a cold opening. This here is the program. It is 1 minute past the hour, 1 minute past six here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you, like I, want to be in the chat room. And we'll see if I'm going to have any luck at all. Oh, for pity's sakes. Oh, for the sweet sake of... I suspect there will probably be a restart somewhere in the immediate future of this computer's existence. But I didn't want to start that and not... Anyway, yeah, so you go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and you click chat room. And you wind up in the chat room. Come on, come on, you can do it. Yeah, come on, come on. Oh, well, anyway, I'm in the chat room, or at least I think I am, or maybe for a few minutes until I restart this sucker, which it looks like I'm going to have to do sooner rather than later. Let's see, that would be Control-Alt-Delete. Oh, someday. Nice new production computer. Well, but anyway. This is live. It is the third day of December 2014, and I have just come rolling in the door from Charleston. And, of course, I had my phone with me, so I've been seeing kind of what's been going down all day long. And yes, it's Prayer Meeting Wednesday. But to wit, the decision by a grand jury not to indict a man who choked a human being to death deliberately, you know, and was recorded in a video format in the process of so doing. This case, not, you know, this ain't Ferguson, Missouri. This is Staten Island. This is New York City. And, well... You know, one of the things that the right... Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. There, we've gotten that out of the way. In Ferguson, all the people who... supporters of Darren Wilson, people who think that there's really nothing to complain about if an unarmed young man gets, you know, 12 rounds put through him. Well, there was no gunplay in the case of Eric Garner. No, none at all. He was accused by a group of New York police of selling loose cigarettes. And that is apparently, in New York City, a capital offense. Because using a chokehold that was illegal in the first place and had been declared illegal by none other than the New York City Police Department, the NYPD, Mr. Garner was choked to death, plain and simple. And, so a grand jury heard the case. One would presume that maybe even they saw the video of Mr. Garner being choked to death, of course, for the summary executable crime of selling loose cigarettes. Good God. I remember once upon a time, you know, you go out for a jog or a stroll or whatever in the park, and some dude would come running by you with a McDonald's bag, and he's handing it. And as you want me, loose joints. Now, in part because we are absolutely flipped out over tobacco in this country, selling loose cigarettes is... on a par, I guess, with moving heroin. It's certainly enough to get you dead, It was enough to get Mr. Garner dead. And now, the world waits. Or maybe not the world, but the rest of the United States. And yeah, I'm sure somewhere the Klansmen and the wing nuts and the Republicans and the birthers and deathers and tenthers and booger eaters and birchers and libertarians and all-purpose Republicans are celebrating gleefully that, see, we've got law and order in this country. I will not tell you for a moment that I've seen that. I don't. This is pure speculation on my part. But that's only because I do not wish to go to those quarters of the Internet and see it for myself, lest it make me furious, nauseated, and any number of other unsavory emotions. So that's kind of what we have to deal with this evening. And I'm still waiting on the... Jesus, okay, hang on. Screw it, hit the reset button. But I imagine we might want to talk a little bit about that this evening. Although, you know, what answers can come from it? Now, there's nothing, once again, there's nothing to present nothing to prevent a prosecutor from presenting the case to the grand jury again, but it probably won't happen. But I wonder now that we've had two in a row like this, and God knows it's not the first two, the no true bills that have ever been returned on an obvious murder. But I wonder, and we saw this in play, and I don't know nearly as much about it from the Staten Island or the New York standpoint, but, and this is, it's becoming very painful to talk about. Sometimes I feel like this program has become, in effect, the Who Did the Cops Kill Today hour. And it's very frustrating because it seems that nothing comes from it. Nothing is learned. And even if there's a civil suit, that's insurance paying out money with next to nothing coming out of the pockets of the people who would actually be legally culpable. We can discuss that if you wish. But the one thing that has occurred to me contemplating both of these cases, Eric Garner's and Michael Brown's, it occurs to me that maybe one of the essential problems we have here is the notion that local prosecutors can do an adequate job of presenting a case against a member of a police force which they routinely represent. Maybe there needs to be, and again, let's just discuss this somewhere down the road. Later this evening, what have you. Maybe there needs to be an on-call permanent special prosecutor. A special prosecutor whose only job is to investigate and make grand jury presentments of police when they engage in what is alleged to be criminal conduct. Remember, in the case of Eric Garner, the coroner or the medical examiner deemed it a homicide. Of course, in coroner or medical examiner speak, that just means that it was the killing of a human being by another human being. That's not saying that it's murder one, murder two, murder three, manslaughter, voluntary, involuntary, what have you. But maybe that's the essential problem. maybe it's the fact. Maybe it's the fact that we expect too much of prosecutors, to expect them to indict police officers from agencies which they routinely represent. It's sort of like the concept of internal affairs inside police departments. If you watch your TV crime dramas and whatnot, nobody likes internal affairs, because internal affairs comes in and upsets the apple cart and ruins the little culture that they've got there of everybody protect, you know, the blue wall, whatever. Maybe we need an agency. Maybe every state. I don't know. Would a state agency be enough? Whose only job throughout, they have jurisdiction within the entire state to pursue criminal charges against police officers who violate the law, violate people's rights, end people's lives. Yeah. Wow, that's a sneeze that I just didn't want to subject you to it, but that's a sneeze that wouldn't arrive. Anyway you look at it, though, it seems that the system as it exists is not working. I mean, I've got... As I sat in the waiting room and everything earlier today, I tried to sit and do show prep, you know, reading stories along the way. And I was kind of amazed to read another story about another dead person. And this person hadn't... roughed up any convenience store clerks or sold any loose cigars. No. Oh, this person in this particular instance was straight up guilty of having asthma. I wish I was kidding. There it is. And this story in particular comes from from Wisconsin, in the Chippewa Falls area. A man was rushing to the hospital in the midst of an asthma attack. Casey Cresson. His girlfriend was driving. And in the course of trying to get her boyfriend in the midst of an asthma crisis, which is a way of saying a not being able to breathe crisis, to the hospital for some relief, she ran a red light. The cops pursued. In this particular case, the man knelt by his automobile. The police recognized that he was in medical crisis, called 911, it took 10 minutes to get an ambulance there, when had the car been simply allowed to go on, it would have taken far less time. Maria Hernwicke was the girlfriend of 29-year-old Casey Cresson. She said, "I just pray this autopsy proves to the police that they should have helped Casey, because no one's family deserves this pain. Not a worst enemy deserves this. I just hope we can prove making Casey sit out on the side of the road suffering an asthma attack and watching the pain he was going through with no one doing anything. Anyone knows every minute of an asthma attack matters, and in the freezing cold, it made his lungs collapse. Those cops treated us horrible that night, wanting to hold my car until I let them search my car before I could leave, knowing I just lost the one person that completed my life and my family. They will go on in life, but me and my daughter have to wake up to this nightmare every day of our lives. They shouldn't go on doing this to another person." And you remember, of course, let's see, what else? Remember the man of color in Florida who was pulled over by the police, who then effectively killed him because they didn't have the common sense to recognize that, what it looks like when a man is having a stroke. These are all symptoms, and I know it's prayer meeting Wednesday and we want to do the shtick, but I don't know. I'm not so sure about the shtick right now. Because it seems like we have evidence before us of a grave and continuing, and God knows for how long it's been ignored in this country, sure enough, crisis. What it is that makes all of this so awful? Is the proliferation of these stories a matter of post 9/11, post September 11th 2001 paranoia? I don't know. Let's see. 18 past the hour, and let's just, in light of the evening, let's give people a chance to say what's on their mind. Of course, let me remind you, if you want to reach the program, there's two phone numbers, 304-663-4676, that's the Gizmo line, 663-HORN, or 304-574-8178. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Bob, can you hear me?
I got you, Tracy. What's up?
Nothing. I just dropped off a very, well, I had an interesting conversation. I love my job, with a gentleman, very much so white, from North Carolina. And so, of course, me being the spokesperson for everything black.
Right. Yeah. It's anytime there's a white person with a question about blackness, any black person nearby is going to be the official spokesperson for all of America with skin tones darker than a grocery bag.
Right. And so he was asking me about my opinions on Ferguson. He prefaced it with saying, "Well, if I ask you this, are you going to get angry?" I said, "Well, I may, and because I'm angry enough, I will pull Greece to get off my camp."
Fair enough.
And he thought I was joking. And I'm like, "And I'm not joking. I will pull over and kick you out of my cab in the rain on the side of the freeway. I can do that." And so once I said that, I guess he's like, "Oh, shit." But anyway, so he was asking me about Ferguson and what do I think the problem is and what should be done. And I said, "Well, maybe if you have more black cops, maybe if you have more female cops, maybe if you didn't have profiling and that it was okay to shoot to kill on sight of a young black man, maybe if..."
Or, hey, let's try another one. Maybe if the cops come from your own community.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Maybe if the cops come from your own community. Maybe if the cops, I don't know, are militarized. maybe if when you're in the police academy, you can talk racial sensitivity. I don't know. And I said, but mostly, maybe if white people didn't sit around and say, well, obviously he deserved it, maybe that might help too.
Well, yeah, there's that too. I don't know. Did you see the New York Times magazine interview of Chris Rock?
No.
Let me
ask the question. Do I want to see the New York Times interview with Chris Rock?
Yeah, actually, it's a pretty lengthy piece, but it's an interesting piece of reading. It's not all about one topic. It's just him holding forth. He's got a movie coming out, so you know. Naturally, you do PR, you do publicity for it, you give interviews. But along the way, Chris Rock made an observation that I thought was quite trenchant. He said, any decrease in racism in America, and I'm paraphrasing, any decrease in racism in America is a function of white people behaving less assholishly.
And that's basically what I said to the guy. I said, you know, I can scream, and we had this conversation at length. I can, as a black woman, I can scream at the top of my lungs about inequality, about discrimination, about anything. And of course, it would be perceived as, oh, she's just an angry black woman. You know, don't listen to her. Or when a bunch of black people are angry and get tired and they start protesting and tearing shit up, which I do not know any shape, form, or fashion. I believe in protesting, but I do not in any shape, form, or fashion believe in destruction of property. That's going too far. But I said, until white people, and this is what I told the guy, until white people come up and realize that you have a privilege, I ain't mad at you for having the privilege, but what pisses me off is when you have that privilege and you don't acknowledge the privilege, that you do not acknowledge that your children can walk down the street and not have anything happen to them. Even if they're walking with pants slouching down to their ankles, they don't have to worry about it. Even if they are dressed like the latest gang, you know, latest rap star or whatever, they don't have to worry about that. They can walk down the street and go unhurt. But if my son walks down the street, not that he would ever dress that way, but if he did, if he walks down the street dressed the same way, he's going to be stopped. Oh, did you ever get to see the link that I sent you on diet racism?
I did see the link. I haven't gotten to spend much time with it yet simply because of things that have been intervening in my, you know, in my existence.
Well, it's like one of the things that one of the snippets that they say, you know, when if you know this diet racism is for the white out people who don't acknowledge that they have a privilege just for being born white, right? And so the guy says, you know, the Irish were persecuted too, but they're not anymore.
Well, it's that sliding scale of whiteness. Because you know, in the mid-19th century, the Irish were portrayed as apes routinely. And then of course we remember that in the 1864 draft riots in New York City, the primary victims the people rioting were Irish. The people they set out to kill as often as they could set eyes on them were black people, because they felt like they were being conscripted into the Union Army to go and fight fight a war over people that they didn't even like in the first place.
Right.
I mean, that's just, you know, it is what it is.
Well, I have a friend that's so funny. We were talking. It's so funny when people say, I don't know why people say things to me knowing what my response is going to be and that I'm not going to be nice.
Well, you don't know, Tracy, you don't know. I mean, you're the one that uses the phrase. Come on. I mean, this is 2014 post-racial America, and you're supposed to be noble and forgiving.
Oh, you mean the Noble Negro?
Yeah.
No. And so, and I get that shocked look. I had a friend the other day who was talking about, I guess we're going to, in the LA Unified School District, there are going to finally be ethnic studies that are required. Required in school districts. Hallelujah, praise God. Thank God I don't live in Arizona or Texas.
You know what? Republicans all over Texas are grieving tonight.
Why?
Because they didn't get to put an insane man to death today.
They didn't do what? I'm sorry. Say that one more time.
They didn't get to put an insane man to death today.
Oh, you mean there was somebody on death row?
Yeah. His name is Panetti. And he's been on death row for 20 years, and there is no doubt whatsoever that he did in fact take a sawed-off .30-06 rifle and just murder his in-laws in front of his estranged wife and child.
Yeah,
blew them away. Okay. There's also no contention about the fact that this guy did it because the devil had got into them.
Uh-oh.
And I mentioned this briefly last night because he was waiting to die today. The 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is one of the nastiest gang of judicial fascists in the United States, even the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals looked at this case today and said, no, really, you guys don't get to kill him today. Sorry, Rick Perry. And so, you know, Rick Perry was probably stomping his feet around the governor's office. And I wanted to kill somebody today, damn it. But the guy at trial, he fired his own lawyers and was deemed to be competent to stand trial and therefore competent to represent himself in the trial. And he conducted the trial. He conducted his own defense, Tracy, dressed up as a cowboy. Don't laugh. Dressed up as a cowboy, he subpoenaed Jesus Christ, John F. Kennedy, and the Pope to testify at his trial, and the prosecution's answer was, see how he's acting crazy trying to get away with it?
Okay.
But there's been a whole bunch of court rulings in between then and now, and one of those rulings was that you can't execute somebody if they don't know why they're being executed.
Exactly.
And, of course, once you've been sent to the death house in Huntsville, Texas, you don't get much better. That's not a place for healing or mental health or rehab or treatment. No. So he has this God delusion that's bad enough. I mean, there are a lot of people with God delusions in this country. But this guy's God delusion was leading him to do really creepy, violent things, like kill his in-laws. And at one point in time, he buried all of the household furniture in the backyard because the devil had got into that. And then he nailed his curtains shut so the devil couldn't get through the window.
Oh, my.
Yeah, because everybody knows the curtains aren't going to slow down the devil. I mean, but there was a ruling that you can't execute somebody if they don't know why they're being executed. And this guy thinks this guy knows that the state of Texas wants to kill him. But he thinks that the state of Texas wants to kill him because he's spreading the gospel of Christ Jesus.
Not because he killed his in-law.
Right, because there was nothing wrong with that, because the devil was in him.
So basically, he thinks he's being religiously persecuted. And so that is why he has died, but a guy, not because he killed his in-law.
Right.
See, in California, there wouldn't have even been an issue. This is why I'm never leaving. You know what, Bob? Every so often, I toy with the idea of leaving California. I'm like, you know what? Why not? You know.
And then you sober up.
And then I sober up, or I turn on the news, or I just listen to you. And then I say, yeah, not so much.
Yeah, where are you going to go? Idaho?
Yeah. Isn't that where the cop, what's the cop's name?
Mark Furman. Mark Furman.
Mark Furman. That's the thing, Bob. You know, there is no place. We don't have a perfect union. However, I am not going to go anywhere where it's even less than perfect, even more less than perfect where I am.
Yeah, and again, a reminder, the killing of Eric Garner took place in what is supposedly liberal New York.
Yeah. Wait. Okay, I think, was that what you were talking about when I just tuned in a little while ago?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the grand jury today declined to indict. Even though there was uncontrovertible video evidence of this police officer choking the man to death over a charge of selling loose cigarettes, and even though the practice of the chokehold had been banned by the New York City Police Department for a considerable period of time prior to the moment at which he choked Mr. Garner to death. And by considerable period of time, I mean a lot longer than like 15 minutes before it went down.
Right. I mean, I thought, because I know they got rid of the chokehold out here years ago. Because, you know, I don't know, it's killing a whole lot of black people. You just can't choke the life out of people. That's just...
Well, you know, you really shouldn't pump 12 rounds into them at 100 plus feet either.
No.
I mean, if a 6'4", 290-pound man is 100 feet from you, and you can't get into your police cruiser, lock the doors, and drive away in that period of time...
Shame on you.
Yeah, but remember, Darren Wilson had to stand his ground, because if he'd gotten in his cruiser and run away, well, the folks back at the station house might have given him noogies. Or called him a sissy.
And so there it goes with like the conversation that I had. So my friend who was, you know, he's kind of a hippie, you know, he fought in the Vietnam War and all that. And so we have these interesting conversations. And so he was saying, well, why don't we have Italian studies? Or no.
Oh, no, not, no, please, please, not that tired old argument.
And I said, did you really get, Marty? I think a lot of times he just says that just to get a reaction from me because he knows what I'm going to say.
Well, okay, let me jump in. Why don't we have Italian studies? We do have Italian studies. It's called European history, which is white history, which is history. Okay, we also have Scottish studies, English studies, Irish studies, French studies, German studies, Swedish studies, Norwegian studies, Danish studies, Finnish studies, Polish studies, Russian studies, Austro-Hungarian studies, Serbian studies, Bosnian studies, and then we top it off with Levantine studies.
For who?
You know, Bible stuff.
Oh, yeah, that stuff. Oh, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, we got all of that.
And so that's what I said, really, Marty? Did you really just say that? Because he tried to pull that, well, you know how Italians were treated. I think were, okay? The word, the emphasis on were, okay? Black people, Asian people, people that don't look like you are still being treated worse.
It depends on how big of a jerk the person you're talking to is, because they will always respond with, well, it's not like you're having to chop cotton or nothing. Didn't you get the vote?
And don't you have a black president? What's your problem?
There you go.
You know, why? Quit whining, you black people. Come on.
The police wouldn't have to... Police wouldn't have to shoot young black men if they just pull their damn pants up.
Right. That's one of the things that they, you know, you got to watch the video, Bob. I know you got to, and even you're not, you can play it on the air so people can hear it. Because there's this one thing, it's a couple walking by, and it says, you know, there shouldn't be, stopping proof shouldn't be a problem if you don't have anything to hide.
Oh, no, see, No, anybody who makes that argument, I simply write them off as an idiot and keep moving.
No,
I mean, I don't even try to remonstrate with them.
No, and that's what I'm saying. That's what the video talks about. That's why the hilarity of it. It's like, why are you worried about stop and frisk? You know, you obviously you don't, if you don't have anything to hide, what's your problem? And like you said, you know, it's the fact that as a person of color, I have to be, you know, I have to be so much more careful and make sure I watch my P's and Q's and stuff like that because I'm black. That's all. I don't have, you know, you, like I was telling, you know, the guy, I said, again, you don't have to worry about walking down the street and being harassed. You know, you don't have to worry about the, I had this years ago when I was in one of my first Black Studies classes, and my teacher, who was a two shades short of being Angela Davis, was talking about racial profiling, right?
Right.
Do you know this white boy had the nerve to say that he's been profiled? And everybody in the class just kind of got real quiet.
Well, how was he profiled?
Well, because, you know, he was in the neighborhood, and I guess they figured that he was buying, because he was in that particular neighborhood, he was buying drugs. And so, you know, and he was pulled over and stuff like that, and blah, 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 blah. And so my teacher, I can't remember exactly what she said to him, but let's just say that he, on the next class meeting, he was not in the class. He dropped the class. Because she ripped him a new one. It was, but in that way that only a black woman who has lived a certain amount of years in our skin could talk to a white man who was as waspy as you can get. You know, you cannot say white man and profiling when it comes to the LAPD and have anybody care.
Well, no, I mean, maybe white folks do get profiled. The cops look at him and go, white guy, keep moving. But the thing is, we are in, Tracy, and I want to make this abundantly clear. We are in a transitional phase in America. And Malloy has pointed this out on a number of occasions, and I've heard it coming from others as well. Poor people of multiple skin tones are getting a little tiny taste. I'm not saying there's any kind of equivalence whatsoever, because it would be a false equivalence, but white people are getting a little tiny taste. I mean, you got a guy. Well, you know, I mentioned that story a few minutes ago. You know, they sat there and watched him die of asthma when they could have just let his girlfriend get him onto the hospital. But instead, in the name of law and order, you know, he had to die.
Mm-hmm. These were white people that this happened to?
Up in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. And then I read today an article from Politico, which I often, you know, kind of look askance at, but it's a story by a guy named Michael Bell going back to August 15th of this year, and the name of this article is "What I Did After Police Killed My Son."
Oh, wow.
Young man, 21 years old, Michael Bell's son, Kenosha, Wisconsin. 10 years ago, the police came up in the night and blew his brains out.
For what?
It's not really abundantly clear.
Okay.
But the police officer who is still on the force,
of course,
put the gun to the boy's head and was pressing hard enough that the muzzle made an imprint in his flesh, pulled the trigger once, it misfired, and then pulled the trigger again. He was acquitted. He was acquitted at trial.
He executed a young man.
The young man. I'm not trying to create divisions here. This is 10 years ago. The young white boy had his hands cuffed behind his back.
So even white people's kids get killed.
The daddy was a lieutenant, a retired lieutenant colonel from the Air Force who had flown combat missions in three wars. And he wrote in this piece back in August, he said, if a blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy, that was my son Michael, can be shot in the head under a streetlight with his hands cuffed behind his back in front of five eyewitnesses, and his father was a retired Air Force lieutenant colonel who flew in three wars for his country, that's me, and I still couldn't get anything done about it, then Joe the plumber and Javier the roofer aren't going to be able to do anything about it either.
Nope. shot that young man in the... Execution.
Within 48 hours of having killed his son, the police had cleared themselves of all wrongdoing.
Of course, so the police cleared themselves.
Didn't even bother to take witness statements.
See, to me, when it comes to police-involved shooting, I think there should always be a special prosecutor assigned.
Right, and that's kind of what I was talking about early in the program, Tracy, and Irish Dave raised a good issue. He said, you know, would those special prosecutors be elected? You know, and what I got to thinking about was, you know, we had the Voting Rights Act until the Supreme Court, you know, the rats gutted it. We need, they should operate absolutely independently of, I don't know, anybody. You see, this stuff is supposed to maybe go to the FBI, but not enough ever comes of it. I'm not interested in federal charges. I'm talking about coming up with some sort of mechanism whereby there's an office of prosecutors whose only job in every state, or maybe you'd have, you know, an office would vary in size depending on the size of the state, their only job would be to take cases, and it would just be automatic. If a cop kills somebody in your county prosecutor does not get to make the prosecutorial choice.
I feel the exact same way. Because, like, classic example of what happened in Ferguson. I mean, do you really think that we already thought, I mean, anybody that's black and anybody that has any sense knew that there was not going to be a bill of indictment. When stuff like this happens, like with Trayvon Martin, people know, we know that nothing's going to be done. I mean, it's going all the way back as far as Rodney King. Those cops beat the living shit out of that man. Okay, yes, he broke the law. Yes, he was speeding. Yes, all that. Yes. But I'm sorry. You don't deserve to be beaten within an inch of your life. I mean, you saw the video.
Well, look, the fact of the matter is the cops are, the police, I'm trying to be careful about that word. The police are not in charge of dispensing summary justice.
But that's
what's happening here, whether it's a beating or whether it's a killing. It is the dispensation of summary punishment.
Punishment. They are being punitive in their actions.
I mean, Michael Brown died for jaywalking.
Died for jaywalking
or walking in the street instead of, I don't know, I call it jaywalking. Eric Garner was killed for allegedly selling loose cigarettes. You know, if if you took all the particulars of place away from either of those stories and just and I don't know, changed the names, then you'd say, well, that obviously happened in Uzbekistan. That obviously must have happened in Iran. That must have happened, must have happened, must have happened. And you'd come up with names of places where we perceive that justice don't go. But it's America.
It's us.
And we have a sickness.
It's a sickness. And like you said earlier about white people finally getting a taste, you know, have you ever read, like what Martin Luther King wrote about why we can't wait and all labor, something I forget, but the reason when Martin Luther King finally got up, stopped walking, talking about that I have a dream and started coming based in reality and saying it's not about race, it's about economics. And when you can protest all you want about sitting at the counter, but if you don't have any money to pay for your lunch, what's the point?
Well, there's and that. So, isn't there?
Huh?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Tracy, you can. You're free to move into a mansion right next to right next to Jennifer Lawrence in Beverly Hills.
Right.
As long as you got the money.
As long as I got the money. What's the point in screaming about this and that if you can't even afford to feed your family? And that is a basic civil right. That is civil rights. I mean, what is it? The pursuit of happiness. I can't be happy if I'm hungry. Right.
Well, and that's kind of drilling down into the issue a little bit, but yeah, and you know, there is not one issue. It's not just an issue of violence. It's not just this is a tapestry that has been woven of poverty, and it's got threads of ignorance and lack of education, and it's got threads of resentment and threads of greed. And the picture that you wind up with ain't no Bayeux tapestry of the Norman conquest of England in 1066.
No. And so the guy asked me, what can we do? And he wasn't being facetious or anything. He was serious. He was, because he's like, you know, I don't speak to a lot, I don't have a lot of black people in my community or what have you. And he's like, I find that I'm very happy that I'm talking to you because I want to really know, what do you think? And I basically told him, I said, sweetie, this stuff, racism is so entrenched and so part of the culture, our culture. It is only going to be, it's not going to be an easy fix. But again, and not until people start acknowledging the sickness and start saying, there is something wrong, and again, it can't come from me. It can't. I already know what's wrong.
Right, and you've got a whole bunch of white folks in this country going, "We ain't no problem," and promptly ostriching up to their earlobes into the sand.
Right.
Tracy, once again, you have engendered people to want to participate in the conversation. So. We'll roll along here and you can sit back and listen to see just how much of a ruckus you've started.
I don't mean to start a, yes I do. Is it but see, now I gotta figure out how I'm gonna be able to hear because I called you on the phone, right?
Well, use your TuneIn app.
TuneIn app.
Or Stitcher.
I'm looking. You know, don't be snarky with me, white guy. I'm looking for my TuneIn app as we speak, and I am now pressing the TuneIn app. So I'm listening. I can't wait to hear what everybody says. And did you get the book yet?
Not yet.
Oh, that's now.
No, but see, I'll have to wait till the weekend until I go see Boss Man Wayne.
Oh, okay. Well, because I should have gotten it today. So check with Boss Man Wayne, please, and let me know. I don't want to go to the post office and go crazy.
No, you won't. You won't. You won't.
Okay, so I'm going to tune in radio now so I can hear what everybody else is saying. Toodles.
See you, Tracy. Bye now. our buddy Tracy, the lady cab driver out in L.A., to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Bob. Good evening.
Well, good evening, Kevin. What's up?
Oh, not much. Listening to your beginning of the show, and you asked what date. Present date, I would have to say this started exactly the minute the Supreme Court appointed George Bush as president. That's when it started. As to the point in history that I would, looking back at history, that I would deem we're at today, I would say Nazi Germany, 1929 or so, right after Hitler came to power. Germany was a smaller, much smaller country, so Hitler had a much simpler time of employing his fascism. We're 50 states across 3,000 miles. Plus, obviously, if you count Hawaii and Alaska in that mathematical equation. My point is, we still have pockets of progressive people in this country and people that truly want to seek justice, whether they're progressive or not. The problem is that we also have significant amounts of people who have bought into the propaganda without thinking about what they're buying into. And just like you say, they get their marching orders and they march. And that's what we're up against, because you can't, and a significant amount of people do this, a police officer uses deadly force, and there's a group of people that just automatically thinks, well, the police officer obviously was in the right, otherwise he wouldn't have used deadly force. And when people begin to think...
Yeah, but that's backward reasoning.
Sure it is. Sure it is. But that's what we face, is backward reasoning. That's my point. And that's what the point you've been saying with Tracy, because we as a country, I get frustrated with the amount of people who just automatically think what police officer A did was the right thing without considering. The Michael Bell case is a perfect example of it. 12 jurors decided this man wasn't guilty. When the prisoner was hit, the gun was pressed against his head.
And he was handcuffed.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that as was the case with Michael Brown, the argument was, well, he was going for the gun. But it turned out that the officer in question, what made him think somebody was going for his gun was he bumped his firearm against the side mirror of the automobile.
Right. If you believe any part of
here's one of the fascinating side issues out of that. This guy is not only still on the force in Kenosha, Wisconsin, he is also a certified concealed carry permit firearms instructor who was out there, and his other job is to teach people when it's a good idea to use deadly force.
Well, his answer to when it's a good idea to use deadly force is whenever you think it's a good idea to use deadly force.
Which is basically the essence of all these NRA stand your ground laws.
Right, exactly. Which is asinine, but getting back to what Tracy was talking about with a man asked her what we can do. Mike Malloy says it just about every night. You say it. We've got to be in streets in numbers in the millions, and not just the number one in front of the million. Like 10 million, 5 million. That's what we've got to do. But we find a, you know, getting progressives to do that, and I use the word progressives loosely, getting people that believe in true justice to do that. As long as the cable's working, as you frequently say, that's the problem. And I dare say that if the cable went out in any metropolitan city in America and it was out for, say, 2 days in a row, you'd probably get more people marching in the street. We want our cable on now, damn it. And yet, just like Nazi Germany, every day we get a little bit farther into this fascism, we get another decision like New York handed down. And as you say, we open up our email, our paper, turn on the TV and hear about another cop shooting somewhere.
Well, shooting, strangling, stabbing, asphyxiating. Hey.
Yeah, and you know, I worked with the police as an EMT. The majority of the police were good people. And now I say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and but wait, Kevin, wait. Let me just sort of interrupt there for a second. And therein lies the problem, because
right.
when you are the chief law enforcement officer of a county, i.e. you're the prosecutor, and you are marching into court day in and day out, relying on the testimony of these witnesses in uniform, how in God's name can anybody expect you to mount a vigorous prosecution of a person with whom you've worked in the past?
Exactly.
Or someone in your office may have worked with. Mount a prosecution of somebody that is the best buddy of one of your you know, frequently testifying officers. I suppose it's a slightly different story in a larger community like New York, but by the same token, there's nowhere that it's not a problem. So I mean, even look at it this way. Let's say a police officer kills a citizen and it's serious enough to take it to the grand jury, right?
Right.
Let's say the prosecutor says, look, we're bowing out of this because, you know, we think we have a conflict. And so the judge then appoints a special prosecutor who comes from the next county over. Well, you know what? That prosecutor works day in and day out with the police, too. And if he goes and takes down the police officer, he's going to engender bad feelings among the police back at home, and they're not going to trust him anymore. And they're also not going to go out there telling people that they need to vote for him when he's up for re-election next year or the year after. That's why you've got to have somebody who is absolutely not affiliated with the police in any way, shape, form, or fashion anywhere who can come in, look at a case, present it to the grand jury, and come away with either a bill or a no true bill. See, there's one difference, Kevin, between what we got in Ferguson and what we got in New York. There's not going to be a data dump of what went down in that grand jury.
Nope.
But, you know, rest assured, if that prosecutor had wanted an indictment in the Eric Garner case, he would have had one.
Yep. And that's what's, I mean, you're right. But we're so set in our culture what it would take. You and I could work out a fairly reasonable and easy, quick solution to having a special prosecutor with no ties to the department. But our culture is so set in its ways, it'll take years to get that to happen. And, you know, again, I go back to the Germany 1929 analogy. That's exactly where we're at. And I don't, you know, I hate to say it, but I'm getting to the point where I feel we, there's no turning back. And it's, you know, just like with the climate. We're at the tipping point now. We can't wait any longer. And yet people on the right, founded by the Koch brothers, keep delaying any climate action. So how much more would they do that in changing our judicial system to make it a much more fair and just judicial freedom for everybody? Because the judicial system is definitely unfair, much more unfair to minorities. But it's also unfair to poor whites. You know, like you just said a while ago, if you ain't got an attorney, you're screwed. And that's our judicial system today. And I don't know what more to say. I guess that's my two cents worth.
You have said it well, Kevin. You have said it well. I mean, because anybody who picked up the phone and called this program and said, "Listen, I've got all the answers," I'd say, well, you know, everybody put on your rubber boots and we'll let the bullshit fly. Because there are no easy answers here.
No.
I mean, you know, we could, okay, here's an easy answer. Let's have the police stop shooting unarmed and killing unarmed people of color.
Yep. Let's make a police officer, which Monday used to be, and at least we'd like to imagine that it was, lethal force was the last possible action you took. You didn't use lethal force unless it was
there. Sure, I mean, look at Michael Brown. What happens if Darren Wilson just gets in his car, drives the hell away, and even if he's scared out of his wits for his life, Big Ten 4 buddy, the demon is after me. It looks like Hulk Hogan, only not nearly as white. Need backup. Adam 12. You know what?
Exactly.
There'd been a dozen rollers there in no time flat.
Right. Right. And, sadly, he chose to take the law into his own hands, because I think you had a call on the other night that said he violated the, I don't know how many police department policies. And the first one was to engage that man. If Michael Brown was what Darren Wilson said he was, that would have been the course of action to take us to back off and wait for backup.
But consider, I got another story out of Michigan, and it's a real doozy too. Man of color just walking down the street with his hands in his pockets, you know, because it's winter and it's freezing. And lo and behold, the next thing you know, here comes a policeman who says, you know, I need to make sure that, you know, I mean, you carry any drugs, you got a gun on you or anything? I mean, we had a call reporting a suspicious black man walking with his hands in his pocket. And the thing is, the guy recorded all of it, and mercifully, nobody got shot.
Yep.
And at the end of it, the police officer can be heard to say, you know, I hate doing this, but if somebody had called, if you'd called it in, I'd have gone and seen it too.
Yep.
Hey. Yeah. Well, Kevin, you have yourself a good evening. It's good talking to you.
All right, Bob. You too.
All right. Take it easy. Bye now. Our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Let's bebop over to the Gizmo line is open now, by the way. 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. And like I said, we will bebop over to the Skype line where the angry Indian waiteth. Hey, Angry.
Hey, my man, what's going on?
Well, you know, you tell me.
I mean, what are they going to tell you? I mean, it's redundant, you know. It's like, how many times is this going to happen? It's not the first time, and evidently it's not going to be the last time. And the fact that all of this can happen under a black president is astonishing.
Yeah, well, okay, so I asked Tracy, I'll ask you, did you read the Chris Rock interview?
No, but I know pretty much what he went, you know, what he talked about. I got the main points, which is pretty much what every conscious black man is going to tell you anywhere in the Anglophone world, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he said, you know, look, Barack Obama is not the first black man who was well-educated, intelligent enough to be president. He said there have been lots of black people who were capable of being president, but white folks couldn't stand the idea. And and he said, you know, people said, well, you know, this is a great day for the black race. You know, he said, no, it wasn't. It was a great day for the white race. Meant y'all made some progress. And
well,
it's kind of hard to walk away from that going, nah, he's got that all wrong.
Well, I mean, you know, that's true. You know, but I'm going to say something here, and, you know, and white folks and a lot of black people really got to get off their fucking moralistic high horse about, well, you know, I'm born in the USA, so somehow that makes me, even if I'm a fucking minority, and I'm living in a hovel, and I have to use candles because I can't afford, you know, I have no money, no nothing, and my children are being shot. You know, I'm talking about, you know, African or native goddamn people living without water, without phones, without any hope at all. And, you know, when it, you know, people talk like that, it's like, that's cool, but let's really look at who Obama really is. Now, he was born in goddamn Hawaii. Fuck with all the Tates and these goddamn crazy fucking clowns who are just so goddamn desperate because, you know, their white world is crashing around them. The man was born in Hawaii. But when we look at his family background, the people who, you know, gave rise to him, he had no real connection with his father, and he said this. He's made this clear in his own writings. He's talked about this. He was much closer to his mother's side of the family than he was to his father. He knew about him, but he didn't know the man. He wasn't connected to anything African. He wasn't raised around black people, you know. And, you know, the fact is, you know, people got to get over skin color sometimes and really look at what race, you know, is about. And racism. Racism is not about hating any goddamn buddy. Racism is about racial hierarchy, you know, that of course is, you know, held together by xenophobia.
Right, but it is a concept that says that there is an order to the universe, and that within the order of the universe there is an order of hierarchy in which people are just inherently better than other people based upon skin tone.
Well, skin tone in terms of what we're dealing with here, but if you look at the European situation, because I know for a lot of Americans, you know, regardless of their background, they see everybody in Europe as white. Whereas if you've actually been in, you know, any Europeans, they look at ethnic differences and they quarrel about these things on a regular basis.
Well, there's an old saying that that Winston Churchill thought the Wogs started at the edge of the English Channel.
Winston Churchill was, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of things that can be said about the man in terms of his representing, you know, the British Isles. But he was a racist son of a bitch.
All the way up to his pink little ears.
Yeah, he didn't like Jews. I mean, he had things to say
that's why they said what they said. You know, he thought the Wogs started at the English Channel. Everybody that was not English was, you know, inferior.
Yeah, which is really weird because the English are a conglomeration of what? You know, the Angles and all the
Angles, Saxons, Jutes, Danes, Celts.
And all these goddamn Swedes that came down and chopped off heads, you know. But what I'm trying to get down to is Barack Obama, for all accounts and purposes, if you get rid of the whole skin thing, if we really are trying to be race neutral and look at what it is that he is actually trying to represent and why he was elected in the first place, was to bring in this whole race-neutral thing, because the whole idea, he's perfect. Why was Barack Obama perfect? How many white people said that he was the one? He was the perfect one. Because unlike me, He doesn't have a slave background. His mother's family actually bought and owned slaves in what was known as Bloody Kansas. Right?
Mm-hmm.
An honorable white man, right? You know, went down there. And when you talk, what was the name of the film, Bob? They Died With Their Boots On, right?
Yeah.
You know,
you can't
even mention his name. John Brown, you can't even mention his name. And it's a goddamn shame that most black people don't even know who he was. You know, and that says it has a lot to do with what we all taught, black, white, and otherwise in this country in terms of our history. But I'm just saying, let's just face facts. He was raised by white people. And this is not impossible. There are many Asians and Native Americans and African people and what have you from around the world that can attest to this. I can attest to this to some degree in terms of my educational years. When you are with white folks, it is very hard to, when you're surrounded by them, it is very hard for you to articulate your beingness. Because you are surrounded by white people and you have to find a way to negotiate, first off, their bigotry. Because you hear it and you feel it and you deal with it every day. And you psychologically become white. You do. I certainly goddamn did. If you can't hear the Uncle Tom and me, you're crazy. That just shows how ignorant someone would be to not understand the history of this goddamn country. I was born and raised in the ghetto, but why do I speak the way I do? Where was I educated? Where did I spend most of my goddamn social time? Obviously, you can tell from listening to me where my romantic relationships led me. It led me into places that the average black Indian would not go to. And when you look at Obama, he is an international black man. I acknowledge that because I understand what the hell that means. And he understands what that means. But he is not an American black man. He has admitted that he has not really dealt with racism. He says that he has not really dealt with it, which is a lie. But the thing about it is, he has had opportunities to go
to Harvard. Well, by God, if he hadn't before, he has for the last 6 years.
Yeah, I mean, come on. He's had opportunities because of the fact that he was around white people. And I mean this, because they understand the system. They can tell him what to do. I've had to, you know, have white friends go with me to look at apartments. Because if I went on my own, I wouldn't get the apartment, you dig? To open bank accounts. I've had to take a white female friend with me because that's the only way I could get any legitimacy across the table. And I'm talking about going 3 or 4 times and not getting any service and then showing up a white woman and then they're willing to talk to me. So when we look at Barack Obama, that is what he represents. He is one of these Africans who has gotten to the point where he says, you know what, I made it in the system, and if you Tom too. Because Dinesh D'Souza says the exact same goddamn thing. And I don't know why Dinesh D'Souza has a problem with Barack Obama. They're exactly the same thing. They're exactly the same thing. In that case, it's partisan politics. But we have to be very clear about Barack Obama. He is a black man by default. But he represents the white system. He represents white aspirations. And that's the way it is. Because if he did not think like that, he would not be where he is. He is a protege of Joe Lieberman. He was down with
oh good God,
McCain that for hurt. How long, right?
Oh, they're buddies.
They're buddies. So you know he was in that Reverend Wright's church in Chicago because if you are black and you're trying to move up the political ladder in Chicago, you must belong to a church, and you know you must belong to a church that has political weight. And that church has political weight because they do a hell of a lot of good for the community in that city. And then, you know, and Fox News just went nuts and took a sermon out of context when Billy Graham damns America every other, you know, Sunday when he's able to talk.
Well,
and I'm not trying to diss him.
No. I know what that sermon was, and I know the impulse that led to the statement that caused, you know, those massive shit hemorrhages on Fox and God knows everywhere else too. What did he say? Yeah, I know. Everybody knows I had a doctor's appointment this afternoon. And so I got this sheaf of papers to fill out. I mean, it made me feel a little bit better. It meant that they were really paying attention. They wanted to know everything that had ever happened to me. I was looking for the blank where I either wrote, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, or call me Ishmael. It's that goddamn thick. But, you know, first thing, first page, you know, race. And I guess, you know, I was nervous. I was about being at the doctor. You know, and it's one thing to go to the doctor. It's another thing to go to a doctor who uses a knife for a living. And so I'm sitting there with my little clipboard and And I see race, you know, and there's all these different boxes I can check. So I drew me, because I guess I'm a jerk. So I write on the paper, there is no such thing as race, then drew me my own little box, put an X in it, and wrote human by it. I'm willing to bet that that's never been done in that office before.
Yeah, but see, but depending on your background, that could actually be a problem in terms of your treatment and your diagnosis. Because if you are African, if you are Native American, you are subject to certain illnesses.
Well, no. I get that. But you know what? We're talking about science. Then fine. Change the word to ethnicity. Call it to change it to demographic. But you know, we're, and then lo and behold, you know, I sat down with the surgeon. And we start having a little chat. You know what the first five to ten minutes of our conversation was? The evolutionary history of upright walking humans. Because he comes in with his little model of the spine and he starts showing me shit. And I said, yeah, I know. I remember my physical anthropology. 2.5 million years of walking erect. And we still don't have it right. And he laughs and he says, this may be the best appointment I have all day. And
well, he didn't know who he was dealing with yet.
And so he's got his little resident with him, who he introduced to me. And so he turns on the resident and says, "So, he's right. How many lumbar segments does it?" And he looks at me and goes, "What's our nearest primate relative?" I said, "Chimpanzee." He said, "Precisely. How many lumbar segments are there in a chimpanzee's back?" And the resident's sitting there going, "Well, I went to medical. I don't know nothing about no chimpanzees." He goes, "Two. Because they don't walk erect." He said, "And that's why we have so many lumbar spinal segments, because it takes a hell of a lot to hold a body up." And he said, "Guess what? Chimpanzees never get herniated discs." So we talked about all that for a while. It was a fascinating conversation. I get it. But it was beyond, "Are you Native American? Are you of African extraction?" There was a million goddamn boxes there. And frankly, if we're going to determine whether or not I'm, whether I am particularly, susceptible to a certain disease, I think we'll figure that out in the examining room. Don't you, Angry? This was for record keeping. This was for the kind of crap that you turn into the government.
Well, I understand that, but, you know, they already have that sort of data anyway. But, you know, the deal is, in terms of medical stuff, that actually can be a factor. See, if you're of color, you have to consider those sorts of things.
Well, sure. You know? Yeah. But again, I say, you know, I think we'll probably figure that out in the examining room. This was strictly demographic information, because there was one over there that said, there was one box that said, "Choose not to say."
And you just couldn't do that one, huh?
No, because goddammit, I'm human. I mean, I know there are people out there who might even want to dispute that, but no, I'm, you know.
Well, again, all of that sounds cool, and I've been hearing that for, you know, more than 50 years now, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, nothing's changed, and, you know, it sounds cool. And see, the thing about it is, I don't, you know, I'm not into this race-neutral thing. I'm not ashamed of who I was.
Oh, it's not. No, I don't. Angry. I don't see it as about shame or pride. Like I said, let's talk about ethnicity. Let's talk about who you are and where you come from. Let's talk about what's been done.
That's why I said who I was.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's what makes me who I am, and it took me a long time to be able to deal with that. Because what I just said about Obama, you know, I know what he went through, and what he's going through. I walked the exact same moccasins that he has. Pretty much. I wasn't exactly born and raised in exact conditions, but, you know, I know exactly what it is that he's dealing with. And, you know, the things that they mock him about in terms of the little stupid right-wing neck jobs that are out here, you know, it's the same sort of, you know, little silly things that any other white kid goes through in the same goddamn circumstances. They just need to say something about him because he's black. And like I said, black isn't about your skin color. Black is about what black represents. See, when people see me and they're ready to cross the road, I mean, for the most part, most people do not look at me as native. You know, most people really don't know what the fuck I am, right? But, you know, they will look, even when they do look at me, and they see me or any other African fellow, they're just like, okay, you know what, ex-slave. So he must be angry. So he must hate me. He must have a chip on his shoulder. Wherever I say anything to this person or not, I'm just waiting for the light to change, you dig? And this is the type of thing that we're dealing with, and that's what happened to Mike Brown and a whole lot of other black men. Because, you know, I mean, not too long ago, I think it was New York, because we talked about it on my show, a young couple was coming down a staircase in a public housing unit.
Yep.
And they were coming down a little bit too fast. Now, you're talking about young people. And, you know, and like I said on my show, I was talking with my own wife about this. And I said, you know, can you imagine being a young woman living in ghetto conditions to goddamn begin with? And here it is, you know, you have this relationship, and the two of you are young, and you're learning, and you're enjoying life. And then you decide to, you know, because you're young and you can do this, you don't want to wait for the lift because it's slow. And then you decide to go down the stairs, and because a rookie cop is paranoid, he decides to blast your boyfriend in front of you, and you watch him take his last breaths. And then, you know, they're ready trying to figure out what they can charge her with.
You know, well, and look, and I know you mentioned it earlier. Look what happened to the guy who did the unforgivable and created all of that video evidence of Eric Garner being choked to death.
Yeah, well,
dude
did face and charge.
That was the same grand jury, and they indicted his ass, right?
Yep. And then you have a bunch of police officers that, because they did something shady, I believe there were fatalities involved in this. And they're suing right now, saying that they're being racially profiled.
Yeah, that's Cleveland. We talked about that last night.
Because they're white police officers, so automatically the entire world hates them. You know, this is the paranoia that we've been talking about, you know, in the black and brown community for 500 years. You know, what is the paranoia? You know, we feed you. You still want to come and kidnap, you know, Pocahontas or whatever, right? You know, that's, you know, nothing's good enough. We give you land. It's not good enough. You know, we trade with you. Not good enough. You know, we give up every goddamn thing. You know, in Mexico, the king ends up being punked out. He loses every goddamn thing because he was abusing all these other smaller groups, and they used them. Spaniards came in. People who literally slept with sheep came in and ruined, destroyed one of the strongest goddamn empires in the Americas. People decide over there, the Mayans decide, okay, we'll work with you. Not good enough, you know. Nothing's good enough, you know. And it's like it's this ego thing, and it's not just white people, you know. It's really the idea of the white mentality, and I really wish people again would, you know, get out of this mindset that the United States is the entire motherfucking world, because it isn't. It's a mentality. What happened in Rwanda was a black and white goddamn issue between the Hutu and the Tutsi, just because they looked the same. You know, this is what I'm saying about Europeans. I know Serbs and I know Croatians, and I can't have them in the same goddamn room at the same fucking time. Even though really genetically they're the same fucking people, but Croat means Catholic. So because of religion, that's how they separated themselves. You know, I mean, we can go on and on about this. You know, ethnicity matters, that the history behind that matters. But when we're talking about the United States, we're really talking about literally a black and white issue in terms of, you know, white paranoia on the idea that, you know, if we give, you know, non-whites any sort of equality, I'm not talking about, you know, extra rights. I'm not talking about freedom even. I'm not talking about particular privileges.
Well, look, yeah, I mean, you are talking about a black and white issue when you're in a culture that invents the concept of passing. Jesus Christ, look at the number of lives that J. Edgar Hoover ruined.
Yeah, but he didn't invent that. You know, the assimilado began with the Portuguese and the Spanish.
Oh, sure. Well, no. The Spanish invented it. The Spanish invented the one-drop rule. The Spanish invented quartroons and octoroons and
And the French did the same thing in their colonies. You know, France Fanon was of that class. I mean, technically, if you look at my own family history and what have you in terms of education, I was of that class. There's a reason why I can sit and talk the type of shit that I fucking talk, because I've had the training. If my parents did not read, if they were not literate people, I would be in a completely different situation, and I would be in a completely different mindset. I would be in a completely different frame of mind. And that's why Obama is smart enough to know exactly what the fuck we're all talking about here when he turns around after all of this damage and he can sign an executive order. But it's an executive order that doesn't really do anything other than promise that we're going to look at this a little deeper than we've been doing.
Well, did you catch his remarks today?
Which ones? I mean,
we will not rest until this breach has been healed between communities of color and the police, and until there is accountability.
Yeah.
I mean, you did it for me, because I was driving along and I hear that and I'm like, yeah.
You know what else is?
And that's not me dissing Barack Obama, okay? That's me saying it takes at least two parties to have a negotiation. And if one party is saying, yeah, we want to come to the table, and the other party is saying, we don't have anything to talk about, there's no problem, how are you going to resolve that?
Yeah, well, again, you're talking about paranoia. I have had some really stupid conversations with people over the past fortnight who want to explain to me that somehow if this police officer is held responsible, talking about Dan Wilson in particular, what happened with Eric Garner is a fucking crime against humanity, and so says the fucking United Nations. The United Nations just released a special goddamn report. And you notice this isn't getting any goddamn airplay on CNN, C-SPAN. None of the American news agencies are talking about this. The United Nations just basically fucking condemned the United States as a violator of human rights, specifically starting with Ferguson and then working on the other things. I mean, they slammed the United States and Canada and Australia, for that matter, for how they treat indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that, we don't understand what's happening, this, that, yeah. We all know what the fuck is happening. We have people like the Koch brothers, whose father founded the goddamn John Birch Society. Okay? You know, we had the Klan show up in Ferguson. The Oath Keepers are still goddamn down there. The police are telling them to stand the fuck down.
Yeah, and what's this about? What's this about one of the witnesses getting one in the back of the head?
What witness? To what?
In Ferguson.
I haven't heard that one yet.
Yeah, he was shot. Oh,
you mean that young brother in the vehicle?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. See, I don't know. I haven't seen enough about that. Of course, there's a lot of speculation, but I'm, waiting to see what I'm trying to lay back and see what comes out first before I make any kind of an evaluation, because there's really not enough data. But, I wouldn't be surprised, because, the libertarian types who don't trust the government, who I really, really hoping that this turns into a race war. They found some video. Somebody used their cell phone or whatever it is and filmed some, they look like special forces to me. Okay. But they're supposed to be civilian police officers. And it seems that they may have, according to this video, allegedly may have caused one of these vehicles to go off. And one of these businesses, because they also made the point that there was all kinds of graphics and all this information that was put out by one of the local news agencies down there in St. Louis. And this particular area where a lot of this damage was done, it was stripped of civilians, that the only people going up and down there were the authorities. So, again, I don't know how true that is, the speculation, but there are people who are looking at that, and it's not coming from me. This is coming from the Alex Jones crowd. So believe it or not. But in terms of this young brother, hey, man, at this point, anything is liable to happen. You had an activist named Maya Atten-White who was shot in the head. The CAT scans are online. The bullet was lodged in her skull. They removed the bullet. She was a student of, I want to say Harvard, but I'm not exactly sure. But, her school was, her institution was worried about her. And that's the only reason anybody even looked at the case. And then supposedly a police officer comes into the hospital after the bullet was finally removed, and no one knows where the shell is.
Yeah.
No one, you know, it's just gone. No one even wants to discuss it. Now, it was reported that she was shot, but then it was dropped. There was somebody else that was shot. She lost her eye the other night, a pregnant woman.
Yep. Saw that.
That was forgotten about. Like the pregnant woman that was kicked in the stomach up in Seattle during the last Occupy protest. She was kicked in the belly by a police officer during the protest, and, you know, she lost the child. She lost the child. And, you know, nothing was done about that. Nothing was ever brought up about that. Derek Williams, there's another name, suffocated in the back of a squad car.
Yep.
Nothing was ever done about that either. Then you had the other young brother who supposedly, with two pairs of handcuffs on him,
killed himself.
Shot himself in the head.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, I got a note coming in for you from Carol. She says, angry. How can the average white person maintain their feelings of superiority if they let go for 5 minutes and see everyone as equal? Like it's some sort of zero-sum game where there's only so much decency to go around and we can't be wasting it on the wrong coloreds.
Well, I mean, look at James Baldwin. I don't know anybody else has ever put it as clear as he has. You know, in order for white people to measure themselves against something, they have to have anything, right? And in every society that you go into, I mean, even in Africa, the blacker you are, the lower you are on the totem pole.
Well, and let's be clear about something, because I think you made a very interesting observation about Europe, and you know what an antiquities nerd I am. At the time of the Roman Republic, way back in its dim past, Gauls had come all the way down the Italian peninsula and sacked Rome. I mean, this was in the 200-400s BCE. And ever since then, the Romans had an absolute terror of the Gauls. And so, fast forward to 58 BCE, and Julius Caesar marches off up into Gaul and lays waste to just about the entirety of Celtic culture from the Rhine to the forests of Britain.
Scots will say no.
Well, but I mean that's the Picts, okay? That's not the, you know, different critters.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, every one of those people were whiter than the whitest Roman.
Yeah, but you're talking about a particular time period. If we're really going to look at the, separate the Anglophone world and look at the older world, because that was the known world, right, as opposed to the unknown and new worlds. You know, a lot of people really do not realize how cosmopolitan the Roman Empire was. And the concept of race, as we understand it today, really didn't exist back then. I mean,
different. The concept of that's one of the important points. The concept of race did not exist. What we translate from Latin as race, is not race as we understand it. But they did, you know, they drew distinctions based upon appearances.
Yeah.
You know, Gnaeus Pompeius, who affixed to his last name the name Magnus, you know, Pompey the Great, was from relatively new money, and he was despised by the optimates of the late Roman Republic for his Gaulishness. Okay, light hair, fair skin. Blue eyes, and was deemed, and he was forever laboring under that, because it was presumed that, you know, somewhere lurking underneath his Romanness was a whole bunch of barbarians just itching to get out.
Well, I've written about this. I believe you've read it. I called it African Judas. Septimus Severus, he was the first African emperor,
yes,
of the Roman Empire. And, you know, he got it the same way everybody else did, through subterfuge and bribery and
bloodshed.
Yeah, but he was basically the first, you know, black man that ran the Roman Empire. And, you know, like Obama, yeah, and I said this, you know, historically, if you really look at the two of them, there's a lot of similarities to, you know, pretty much not make his bones. I mean, he was a respected general, but to prove that he could do just as much damage as any, you know, because Italy, as we understand it today, that didn't exist yet. But that he could do this, this is solid as any other Roman citizen. And he laid waste to North Africa and most of what we now know as the Arab world. laid waste to it. Laid waste to it. I mean, he was considered a pretty effective, effective emperor and so on. But you know, the race thing was not an issue. You know, the issue was, you know, what in terms of him, you know, was he acculturated in terms of the Roman way of looking at things? And he was. He was Roman enough. He was Roman enough to have the respect of the army, which was important. He was Roman enough to be respected by those who ran the ownership class.
Right. Yeah. Get the job done, and you can have the crown.
You can have the crown, and he was able to command men. So you know, he was able to do that. But at the same time, politics being what they were in Rome, he was under pressure to prove that he was really a Roman as opposed to a North African. And he did that by, you know, laying a, you know, three separate campaigns that were really, really bloody. You know, and then in terms of Alexander the Great, depending on whether or not he was great, if you ask an Arab that, they'll tell you just the opposite.
No, he's
he was
a devil.
Losing the respect of his men. Yeah, he was losing the respect of his men because they said he was losing his Hellenistic sense of himself. That they were picking up so many different cultural attributes, and he was, you know, encouraging his men to intermarry wherever they went as he integrated his military. And there were people who were ready to rebel with him on that because they're saying that if we treat these people who look like us, who are so different from us, the same, then how the hell are we going to tell who the hell the masters are and who are the ones who should be following us? They did not want to lose their status. Their status as Greeks, they felt, or at least the idea of the Hellenistic, you know, culture, they felt that they were superior to everyone else that they ran into. So, you know, that they did not want
to
lose
that,
status.
When in fact the rest of the Greek world looked upon Macedon as a bunch of thugs.
As a bunch of thugs, yeah.
So since we're playing in the fertile fields of the ancient world, I'll drop one more on you. Go, use any search engine. Go and just type in Akhenaten, Akhenaten.
Yeah, go ahead.
Then click images. And tell me how many different busts and how many different photographs you see that look surprisingly like Barack Obama.
Well, yeah. I mean, have you seen Nefertiti?
Yeah.
There's a lot of things. I mean, the face on the Sphinx is not, you know, European, and it's not even a typical Arab, you know, a modern Arab, because, you know, these things have shifted. The true Arab comes from Yemen. Where is Yemen? You know, when we, you know, we really got to get past the skin thing. Just like I was telling someone not too long ago, when you look at Sami people, these are indigenous people, but you look at them as white folks, you know, but they're not. They genetically, they come from North Africa. You know, they have more in common with Africans genetically than they do with Western Europeans. You know, this whole race thing is really goddamn stupid. And what's worse is the United States and the Americas in general, but in particular, Mexico, the United States, and Canada have made a, you know, very concerted effort. Australia didn't really have to because of their origins, but, you know, in particular. Because the people who, you know, went there, they were all looking for something and didn't have anything, so nobody really gave a damn where someone came from, right? You just had to be white, period. But, you know, when it comes to the Upper Americas, there was this thing where we have to outnumber the indigenous people. So, you know, can't kill everybody, we try, this, that, and the other. And they kept out as many Italians as they could, as many Russians as they could. But at the same time, they needed people who worked these factories. And they needed to change that racial balance. And this was written about. Mark Twain used to joke about this. You know, he was like, the only thing that seems to keep certain people safe is having other people around them who look exactly like them. Which, of course, you know, could have meant a whole lot of, you know, different things. But, you know, that's really what it came down to. And all of this panic. I mean, the Klan came from white panic.
The whole idea of North American racism comes from white panic.
White panic, you know.
Because, you know, white folks couldn't work the fields, wouldn't work the fields. I mean, look, you know, the Jamestown colony damn near starved to death because the corporation didn't send over anybody who knew how to dig a hole in the ground and drop a seed.
They
sent gold prospectors.
And that's another goddamn thing. You know, a lot of people don't like to talk about that either. I mean, they emptied the fucking joints over in England and got rid of a lot of the fucking religious freaks and shit. And put them on a few fucking boats.
Oh, those noble pilgrims whom we recently allegedly celebrated?
Yeah.
They broke open native graves and stole food out of them and stole grave goods out of them. Because they stole clay pots out of graves because they didn't have any goddamn pots.
You know
those noble Christian pilgrims began by, grave robbing.
Well, look, they were desperate, blah, 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 blah. We can try to be objective, but the point is, who wants to talk about that, right? Nobody wants to talk about the nastiness of this. I mean, the whole, idea of European invasion was, frankly, if you're doing well at home, you don't leave. Which just goes to show how bad things were in Europe. You know, the whole idea of the Crusades was an excuse. That was an excuse. What was it, Pope Clement? That was an excuse. Kill as many Jews as you can on your way up to the Holy Land. And when you get there, lay waste every goddamn buddy, in the name of Jesus. But, Europe didn't have any goddamn thing. You know, the French, Germans, or what became Italians and so on, Eastern Europeans, a lot of them became crusaders because they were looking to strike it out. They were looking to get their own piece of land. They were looking to become rich because there was nothing where they came from.
Right, and what you see in the aftermath, the ultimate failure of the Crusades, the French king strips one order of its wealth, another one kind of goes to ground, but then once it was all well and done over and everybody had to leave and come back home, you get 100 years of misery in France from what are simply referred to as the companies. And these were out-of-work knights who simply rode around pillaging the countryside.
Yeah, I mean, what is going on right now? When we look at Ireland, anyone who looks at the crime scene, because I actually look at the Interpol stats. They put out a report, every now and again for public viewing, and Ireland has become, or at least it was at the last report that I read, was the crime capital of Western Europe. And what happened? You had the Irish Republican Army and all of its incarnations who, when the cause just wasn't working any goddamn more, right? The stalemate after stalemate, the violence wasn't helping, and then they were so infiltrated, they couldn't do any goddamn thing. Anyone who knows anything about steak knife knows what I'm talking about. And, you turn around and you look at what is left of the remnants of that. So you have a lot of these trained young men who are aggressive and hungry without leadership and without discipline. So they get into the drug trade. Now, the IRA, I believe, to some degree, at least this is what the British authorities say, in some incarnation, were involved in various criminal enterprises in order to fund their activities. And, these young guys are now without leadership. They're just out there. They're using that training to ply the drug trade. Belfast is, was pretty bad, before, during, and after the Troubles. Now Dublin, I'm not going to say it's like Belfast, but it's not good. And the same thing happened in L.A. I mean, if you really want to be fair, if we're really going to talk about black people being real human beings, if we were to take, the war going on between the Crips and the Bloods, and, strictly in L.A., in L.A. County, in South Central, and transported that to Africa or Eastern Europe or South America or Southeast Asia someplace, it would be properly called the Civil War. That Civil War has been going on for damn near 35, 40 years. And where did that come from? Because when the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, which was a militarized front, and then what came after them, the Black Liberation Army, again, a lot of people do not know this, an armed front. They were out here running side by side, kind of with the Weather Underground, And here it is, they start this whole militant idea, the black leather jacket and the beret and the rifle and what have you. So now these young fellows are left with an image. There's no discipline. There's no education. There's no structure. So what do? They ply the drug trade. I mean, what was Yugoslavia? What happened to the KLA? Right?
Right.
What happened with, we were talking about Serbs and Croats earlier. What happened with the fascists, the Ustashi, that came back in Croatia? They're all involved in the drug trade. These are people who are involved in ethnic cleansing, chopping entire, you know, the heads off of all the men in a village. They're now part of the drug trade. So we have all of these arms that are flowing through Europe, all of these arms that are thrown through Asia, all of these arms that are produced in the West, that are, and Israel, you know, and China, flowing through Africa. And where is this going? You get a lot of, you know, bullshit, rah-rah talk about liberation movements, but these guys are all involved in the drug trade. What happened with the FARC?
There you go.
And here we have people of color who are in positions of power who aren't doing a goddamn thing about it. And then when you get Hugo Chavez, who tried to, well, they try to take him out of office, and more than likely the man gets cancer the same time that Cristina Fernandez gets cancer. And somebody in Uruguay gets cancer. You know, a bunch of them got cancer all at once in South America. A lot of people came down with cancer of the throat and what have you, and the lymph nodes in South America all at once. Because they were actually trying to deal with their criminal element in Brazil and what have you, because they realized they can't, you know, this is pure capitalism in their face, and they can't stop it unless they find a way to actually, you know, stop the conditions that give rise to gangs, that give rise to the alternative economies. If they don't give people hope, they will never stop the crime. If they don't give people education and fair housing and a goddamn coat when it's cold, they will never stop the crime. People have to eat. They are going to do what they need to do to survive. And then you have some people who just don't give a damn. They like the smell of blood, and they use all of this stuff as an excuse to go out there and take advantage of people. You know, so, I mean, these are conditions that no one really wants to talk about. And here we have a Barack Obama, and, you know, you would think, the assumption is made that because he looks the way he does, that he sounds the way he does, that he makes promises like putting on a pair of comfortable shoes to go march with the unions in this country, and you have all these young people going to jail and losing their jobs because they're trying to get a living wage, and he hasn't been out there in support of them at all. And I'm sorry I'm being long-winded, you know, but the point is...
No, you're doing fine.
He is not, you know, what everybody wanted him to be, and the thing is, we all knew that he wasn't what we wanted him to be. He sounds a little, you know, whatever now, but he only sounds militant if you're Rush Limbaugh. He only sounds militant if you're a scared white guy, you know? A paranoid white man who doesn't really need to be paranoid.
If I was independently wealthy and, you know, had 15 people whose only job was to polish the Gulf Stream 5, maybe I'd be worried too. But, you know, goddamn.
But those are the people who are not worried to the same degree as like this Chuck C. Johnson and all these other creeps that are running around on social media, ruining people's lives. Trying to get Michael Brown's parents arrested and charged.
Oh, you know, yeah. I saw that earlier today. What is
false
it?
Information?
Well, never mind that. I'm trying to. I'm looking right now. Let's see, where is it? Some asshat. There it is. Keith Ablo over at Fox.
Oh.
He wants Michael Brown's stepfather charged with his death because he didn't teach him to respect the police.
Hey, there's a St. Louis police that on Twitter I saw earlier this afternoon. They want an apology from the Rams players.
Yeah.
Every officer that feels insulted, they demanded an apology. It's like, you got to be kidding.
Yeah,
you
know, but then the Rams front office gave them one.
For what? You know, it's just like this goddamn photo of this Devontae Hart and this Brett Bonham officer here in town, in Portlandia. Turned out now to find out he's a 100% supporter of Darren Wilson. He's been on Fox. He's on these conservative sites. He's on TV talking about, you know, these black people are holding things back. They're holding back progress because progress is what I did. Hug a black kid who is the result of, you know, of. I mean, look, I'm just going to be straight out with you, Bob. This kid, I hate to say this, but he's being used, and, you know, it is what it is. You know, this boy would be happy if anybody paid him any attention. He's had a fucked up life.
Yeah.
You know, his parents are drug addicts.
One decent little moment of existence, right?
Yeah, you know, he's being decent, but that cop knew full goddamn well that that was a camera op because everybody knew that that was an AP photographer that was trailing behind him. And then he turns right around and goes on, we find out on social media he supports Darren Wilson. And then you turn around and find out he's talking about how the protesters are the ones with the problem. Not the fact that the Klan was down there. Not the fact that the Oath Keepers are down there. You know, not the fact that, Michael Brown's been called a thug, a demon in court, an it.
Let's add one more to the, to the tally, shall we, Angry? A story coming out from earlier this year. Dontre Hamilton, mentally ill, black, was sleeping in a park when Officer Christopher Manny, this is in Milwaukee, a lot of these cases are rising out of Wisconsin.
I don't know what it is.
Confronted him. And being roused from his sleep, Mr. Hamilton, who was mentally ill, defended himself. And it turns out that Dontre Hamilton had blunt force trauma injuries to his head and face. 14 shots were fired. 7 of the shots were in a downward direction, according to the medical examiner. And one of the shots was into his back.
Yeah, but hey, nothing to see here. The nigga just broke. They break sometimes, you know.
Man, that's straight out of Richard Pryor. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the kind of shit we said at the dinner table, man. You know, I keep, you know, trying to explain to folks that, you know, we don't sit around talking about Beyonce that much. Some of us do. Well, a lot of us, you know, we're sitting talking around, you know, who got into trouble this week, who got hemmed up this week, who tested positive this week, you know, who's being told they got 6 weeks to live this week, who's about to lose their house this week, who just got a final, you know, dispossess this week, who's losing their job this week. We're not sitting around having fun, smoking blunts, watching the goddamn NBA and all that type of shit. We're trying to figure out how the fuck we're going to survive this week. And see, and the thing about it is, you know, I didn't, you know, expect miracles from Mr. Obama, but I expected, especially somebody with a geeky wife, I expected, you know, somebody that was going to talk a little bit about these things, and he hasn't. And, you know, that they have no money to deal with anything.
Yeah, but look how much shit he caught when he said, if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon Martin.
Yeah, but Bob, that's a given. That's a given. They're going to say, if he said that, you know, I really feel everyone needs to see a doctor tomorrow, or, if he went out tomorrow and said, I think everybody needs a chance to see a doctor, I think that should be a right that every American has. And that's to say he said it like this.
Oh, no, you'd have screaming. He's trying to bring socialized medicine to America. He didn't give up yet. He's going to destroy health care for death panels.
Yeah, so it's going to happen anyway. I can see him going through the first term. Okay, I got to survive this second thing.
Right. So, you know, okay, you got a hostile Congress. Ain't nothing going to happen for 2 years. Go out and give them something to remember.
Well, there's that, but that doesn't mean anything to me either. I grew up watching Preminger, right? Advised consent, all those backwater dealings. Why wasn't he back there with the DNC and saying, Pelosi, I'm edging you out because we were talking about getting Bush after what the hell happened, and you tabled it, so I'm going to replace you. Harry Reid, you got 2 weeks to straighten the fuck up, or I'm going to replace you. And everybody else stepped the fuck in line. Because, see, that's what Kennedy did. he and his brother went in there and said, look, this is what the fuck is going to happen.
And we do know how that ended.
Well, yeah. Now, I don't know if anybody had, you know, they did a private showing of the Zapruder film or whatnot up there. You know, if that's like a required...
Well, that's what Bill Hicks said. Every new president gets shown the Zapruder, gets shown the Kennedy assassination film, and about 2 minutes in, he goes, wait, this isn't the Zapruder film. This is a different angle. And the guys showing the movie go, yeah, that's right. And the new president says, where do I sign?
Hey, man, you know, there's a lot of Russian in that in terms of, you know, this is the truth, and everybody knows this is the goddamn truth, but continue to pour the tea and pretend that nothing's going the fuck on. You know, we all know what the, you know, the 3,000-pound gorilla is, but nobody really wants to talk about it. Because if you bring that up, then you have to talk about a whole lot of goddamn things that have been going on for a very long time. And the only way justice could happen, as Malcolm X has said very plainly, you know, the United States is the only country in the fucking world that's in a position to have bloodless revolutions because you have the democratic process here. That is one thing they couldn't say in goddamn Soviet Russia. They couldn't say in China. And they really can't say too many other fucking places outside of Western Europe. The idea was you supposedly had laws here that on paper, you know, say that everybody here has the same shit. But if you go online, and, you know, like I said, you look at what I do on Twitter, you will see so many fuckers. When you look at their goddamn bios, they got constitutional, you know, constitutionalist, this, that, and the other in big letters, but then they'll turn right around and say that black people don't deserve constitutional protection. I mean, Justice Scalia said that, but then he also said that the Ferguson grand jury was fucked up.
So, well, yeah, but the problem is, him saying that the Ferguson grand jury was screwed came from an actual opinion that he wrote. He didn't come out and say that in particularly in regard to Ferguson. That comes from one of his old opinions. And the, you know, the problem with somebody like Fat Tony is that he writes stuff and then it comes back and bites him in the ass. And he goes, well, we can distinguish that case.
Yeah, see, he's doing some damage control because those two brothers that were just released recently, one of them on death row, I mean, they did years. They did lifetimes. And it turned out that, you know, they knew full well that these black men could be railroaded, and they did it. They did it. And mm-hmm. Justice Scalia was using their photographs saying that this is the reason why we need to have the death penalty. And it turns out these two men are goddamn innocent. And they knew they were innocent from the fucking get-go. So, yeah, he's trying to save some fucking face because every time this shit happens, it makes the system look bad.
Well, before we wrap up, let me just throw one thing out there to consider, Angry. And I want to go back to where I was kind of at the beginning. We have placed a great deal of focus upon the conduct of police. Mm-hmm. But in the final analysis, as these two grand jury presentments show, the real key to justice or injustice in these cases is not the police. It's the prosecutors. And it's the incestuous relationship that prosecuting attorney's office and district attorney's offices all over this country have with their law enforcement offices. Because almost, I mean, I can't say for certain everywhere, but in almost every state, a county prosecutor, a district attorney, is deemed as a matter of law, Angry, to be the chief law enforcement officer of that county, that district. So if the prosecuting attorney picks up the phone and calls up to the state police or calls the county sheriffs or calls the city police and says, do X, they got to do X. Or don't do. They got to not do. I mean, sure, you got your chiefs of police and your high sheriffs, and you got your detachment commanders and your local state police units, what have you. But in any given county, the head of law enforcement is the prosecutor. Now, if we take that and understand it really all the way down to the ground, then if you then simply ask the question, how in God's name can the chief law enforcement officer be presumed to be able to dispense with his duties or her duties vis-a-vis one of her own subordinates, the answer comes back, it ain't going to happen. You know, I've seen a lot of articles, Angry, about, well, you know, most of the time when even when police are indicted, They're not convicted. And then the people writing the articles that I've seen will go on to talk about how jurors always trust police. And I'm sitting there kicking furniture saying, bullshit! It has everything to do with the prosecution. Prosecuting attorneys of given counties have no business handling the prosecution of police gone bad. I mean, if a county would have to hire a private practice criminal lawyer to come and do it, that person would be capable of doing it. But it seems to me that you have got to consider the fact that these things are happening the way they do because you can't have cops prosecuting cops. And district attorneys and prosecuting attorneys are, by God, by law, by definition, cops.
Well, the system was set up to be that way. It's not accidental.
Well, it was set up to be that way, not necessarily for nefarious purposes. The cops have to answer to somebody, especially within the legal setting. But it had an unintended consequence, and you know, the law of unintended consequences is the primary weapon of the goddess of irony. It has the unintended consequence of making it damn near impossible to bring a criminal, a police officer engaging in criminal conduct to justice.
Well, yeah, but again, it was set up that way from the beginning to ensure that the right people stay in power. This is not new. There might be some ebb and flow every now and again, but the whole idea of police forces in the United States anyway, I can only speak for the United States in terms of my own research, were slave catchers. You know, and then it expanded later on to private policing under, I can't remember the name right now. It starts with a W, but, or it has to be with a P. You know, he hired himself out as Secret Service, believe to the Lincoln administration, but in Pinkerton's, the whole Pinkerton agency, detective agency. I mean, that became the idea of the professional, you know, police officer and what have you. And of course, they were always in cahoots. They made, you know, the Pinkerton detective agency made sure that certain people won elections and certain people lost elections. You know, that they did more than detective work. They were actually doing intelligence work for whoever the hell was paying them, for whoever the hell was in power. I mean, you can look at New York in the 1800s in terms of real corrupt connections between the police and politics. Boston, connections between police and politics. That's how the Irish got power in Massachusetts. You know, the same way the Irish got power in Philadelphia. How many Italians got power in Philadelphia, in New Jersey. You know, because of these connections between, you know, the police and certain politicians. The police, certain unions, and gangsters, and politicians. You know, none of this is new. But the bigger, you know, question that as far as I'm concerned, that is never really asked, is always, you know, hinted at, but is never really asked. All of this is really allowed to go through. Those prosecutors are allowed to be like McCullough and be part of the fundraising effort for Dan Wilson at the same time that he's supposedly prosecuting the case against the police officer who executed Darren Wilson. He's raising money for him, but then he's, you know, leading everything, as you just, you know, laid out, and then mentions that Michael Brown was on, you know, marijuana, like 44 times, and all of these other things. He was basically doing the defense attorney's job.
Absolutely. It was a prosecutionless grand jury presentment. It was a grand jury presentment that was presented by the defense.
Yeah, and like you said, this is not new. You know, in my own, you know, reckoning of time, the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, I can point to cases, I can point to family cases, friends, these sorts of things, right? But the bottom line is that the extant society here, the white people who really do control the system, who think that they don't control the system, you have your limitations, but you have more say than I do. You have more say than the average person of color does. If you really wanted things to be different, you would make it different. You would make it different. And, you know, white people don't want this weight. But, see, you have to carry this weight. You can't go out here and do all the damage that you're doing in Iraq and Afghanistan and say this is all in the name of democracy, and then you have a grand jury decision like this, and then you know want to talk about Martin Luther King, when Martin Luther King condemned this sort of thing, he condemned war. But we had Jay Johnson, who's running things over at the fence right now, right? Didn't he turn around and say that Martin Luther King would have understood and supported Iraq and Afghanistan?
Yeah.
So and Barack Obama was behind this. He also put some Asada Shakur, a police brutality case, right? This is the first woman to be put on the terrorist watch list. And how many white people have been shooting up immigration centers, movie theaters, Walmarts, going down?
Yeah,
the
sorry, no. That wasn't an ISIS immigrant who went on the shooting spree in Austin the other day. 2 o'clock in the morning. No. No, that was a good, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing white man.
Yeah, and I just mentioned this on my last dispatch because this fucker on Blacklisted News, libertarian, constitutionalist, this, that, and the other. Not only does he say that the world is better that Michael Brown has been shot because it's just one less thug out here. He didn't say anything about his constitutional rights. He said that the real victims are the Homeland Security and the police down there and the National Guards because, they have to deal with these black people. And, of course, he was very careful about his language. He was very crafty, and he was, very careful. But, like I've been saying on Twitter the past week, you got, these libertarians here, Ron Paul, Alex Jones, they all like to sound like they're the smartest guys in the room. Rand Paul, I'm smart. I understand this more than you do. You're a dummy. This, that, and the other. They all speak with ego, and they all speak with this, very smug goddamn attitude. And this motherfucker will turn around and say, well, the only real problem with Ferguson is that they're going to come after the Patriot movement. And now we got this other problem because this guy goes and shoots up the immigration thing down here in Texas. They're going to look at us as being bad. The Klan is out here right now saying that our image is really being mishandled by the press.
I tell you who's getting the greatest mileage out of all this in many ways is the right wing's darling people, men primarily of color. I got two stories here. I may run the audio later, and one's from Alan Keyes and the other one's from Ben Carson.
Look, I remember watching Alan Keyes get his ass dragged out of the Republican motherfucking goddamn debate in Atlanta, motherfucking Georgia, screaming about his constitutional rights and that he was a fucking registered Republican candidate in that state, and they dragged his ass away, put him into a fucking squad car, and dropped him off in the worst goddamn neighborhood that they could find in black Atlanta. So fucking Alan goddamn Keyes. I don't want to hear nothing from him. And
then I'll wait to play the clip.
And Alan West is a goddamn war criminal. So, fuck both of them. And Mia Love, fuck her too. And
Ben Carson.
Oh, fuck Ben Carson. He's easy to goddamn get rid of. Now he's blaming feminism for what happened. Fuck him. But you know what? I'll lay this on you, Bob, before I go. Here's a bone to the fucking Republican Party if they're so goddamn serious. I keep hearing all the fucking time about the Klan was started by the Democrats. No one wants to talk about the Civil Rights Bill and how all those, George Wallace motherfuckers went over to the Republicans. But that's okay. Let's assume that they're telling the truth, that the Democratic Party is totally running the goddamn Klan. So you're saying that the Democrats then were the ones that were down there threatening to hurt the protesters in Ferguson, right? Okay. Well, Mia Love is now saying that the Klan is sending fucking threats and bullshit to her house. So where is the GOP defending her against the Democratic Party right now?
Or against the Klan.
If they really wanted to make an argument and really wanted to get black people to vote Republican, why don't they fucking do something about the goddamn Klan sending shit to Mia Love's house? She's one of
Let's just drill down on that for a minute. Where were all of these Republicans who make those claims? And I've seen it too a million times. When people were drawing down, Oath Keepers, who, you know, have half of those probably have membership in the Klan too, or the new white nationalist Christian movement, whatever, Christian Identity, pick one. You know, they're all the same, just different, you know, just different cuts of the sheet. Where were they when they were drawing down on federal employees in Bundyville?
Oh no, they were nowhere. They were nowhere. They were nowhere. They were nowhere.
No, wait now. It's not like they were nowhere. They were over on Fox News talking about how the Oath Keepers were protecting America from having the federal government bring down its jackbooted thug boot heels on the necks of white, God-fearing, patriotic America. They weren't nowhere. They were right there. Clive and Bundy was sitting there babbling away night after night after night on Sean Hannity's program until he got until he you know went a little too far off script and said, "Well, let me tell you about the Negro."
Oh yeah, and Sean Hannity saved his ass. Yeah, but see, Sean Hannity needs to be reminded that Hal Turner is still telling people over in Jersey that they're buddies.
Oh, I don't doubt, and you know what? They are. They are. Come on.
They're friends. So, or at least they were. I mean, Hal said that, you know, Sean was too punk to say the truth on Fox. He said he's worried about losing his job. Right? So, hey, you know, I mean, if they're really serious, then let's really come out. I'll support the Republican Party if they want to go after the Klan. You really want to do this? I'll support you. You'll get all
yeah,
the
don't
black
look,
votes.
Don't look for that on the early docket of the incoming 114th Congress, okay, Angry? Because you'll hurt your eyes.
No, I'm just throwing it out there. You know, if Clive and Bundy can go around and make threats and do something that if any black person or any Native American, any goddamn way, because I'm old enough to remember Wounded Knee, if, you know, could you imagine if Clive Bundy was of color? And did exactly what he did. Would he be on Sean Hannity's show talking about his rights? Would Sean Hannity have him on talking about his rights? Or would he have that the one black guy that I saw wearing a goddamn Iron Darren Wilson T-shirt?
Beautiful.
Ooh, I don't know how many fucking friends.
Must have ordered it from BenCarson.com.
Or AlanWest.com, one of the goddamn two. Anyway. All right, my brother, yo, you know, take care of yourself, man, and please, if you can support this show, please do so. Peace.
I appreciate it, Angry. You have a good night. Hey, are you gone? You still there?
No, what's up?
Okay, no, you don't get to leave without giving the URL for people to listen to you.
Oh, you can check us out at aboriginalradio.wordpress.com.
All right, good deal, because I know for a fact Tracy has been hanging on every word. I had an email from her a little bit ago. He is speaking the truth. Preach. Call me Auntie Tom, she said.
Well, I mean, we were talking about you running the show on, you know, on the feed. Go right ahead, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, let me know and we'll make it happen.
And please check out the doctor too. You gotta listen to his lectures. If you really want to understand the basics of American politics, check out headonradio.com, man. Check it out. You got to check it.
Yeah, I didn't realize you were listening to Dr. Bill.
I got the podcast, man.
Did you catch Monday?
I haven't gotten to it yet, but it's in there.
You'll write me when you do because you'll get goosebumps.
Okay. All right, so yo, headonradio.com, everybody. Support this.
Headonradionetwork.com, aboriginalradio.wordpress.com. Right?
Yeah.
All right. See you, Angry.
All right. Peace.
Our buddy, the Angry Indian. It is 14 minutes past the hour. What Angry said about supporting the program is very true. We exist because you have determined over the past 10 years that this network will continue to exist. I haven't said anything about fundraising this evening, and consequently, there have been absolutely zero fundraising responses. So, you know, we do try to raise money every evening. We would have had a challenge on the table tonight. It got taken care of last night. But, you know, there's always going to be nights like this. And that's why we try to get a little bit ahead. So anybody that would like to help, you know, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. The traditional mail address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Remember, checks, money orders made payable to The Horn, head-on communications, something like that. Not Bob Kincaid, because Boss Man Wayne deals with all of that, and I don't see it. We just pay bills. So there we go. Help would be sincerely appreciated. And, you know, I don't mean to fundraise on Angry's back or anybody else's back for that matter. But the fact of the matter is everybody gets a say here. Everybody gets a say who wants a say. It is 15 minutes past the hour. I've seen a couple of questions in the chat room. Let me answer the question real quick. Yeah, I went to see the neurosurgeon today. Nice guy. Smart guy. Anybody who wants, or anybody who's willing to sit down and discuss spinal surgery by starting out explaining the transition from our ancient primate ancestors to upright walking, that would be Homo erectus, by the way. Stop it. Never stop with the dirty jokes. I was listening to National Petroleum Radio as I was driving home, and I did not get the story. I wanted to. I'll have to check it out later. Apparently, the first ever physical artifact of Homo erectus has been found. And you know I'm a sucker for an archaeology story. It's a seashell of some sort that has been that a geometric design has been incised into, and they say it was done by Homo erectus, who was our first ancestor who got up and decided to walk around on two legs instead of two and knuckles in the front or any of that kind of stuff. If I ever run across one of those intelligent design types again, and I work really hard to stay away from them, I do, I'm just going to look and say, spinal column, there's your intelligent design, suck it. Because, yeah, it turns out, I knew we were in for an interesting conversation when the neurosurgeon walks in and he's got his little model of the cervical spine. And he started talking about how we would go about doing the surgery to fix me. And he showed me how to press into the front of my neck. And he said, yeah, you feel that right there? Yeah, just behind your run pulp. Yeah, that's your spinal column. And in order to fix this, we go in through your throat. Make a little incision. We've got a little gizmo we use to move your windpipe out of the way. And he said, we'll get in there and we'll excavate all of that blown out disc and all that herniation and everything. And he said, then we'll go in there and put a little bone graft in. And he said, we'll take one of these little, and it looks, you know, it just looks like a bracket that holds together like a shipping crate. And we'll screw those in. You know, he said, we got special angly kind of screws that go up in there so that you don't have a piece of screw sticking out of your neck. He says, really cool. I've done a million of them. And then we talked about Peyton Manning for a while. He said, yeah, we're talking about exactly the same surgery as Peyton Manning had. He said, you know, we used to put in artificial discs, but Peyton Manning put paid to that. He said, I put in the first artificial disc in a cervical spine in the state of West Virginia years and years and years ago, and I've done a bunch of them, and we thought it was helping, and it hasn't hurt anybody, but he said, Peyton Manning kind of proved that we don't need to do that. So we talked and we talked and we talked and we talked. And he eventually came around and said, how long would I be down? And he said, well, you know, if you're one of those type A captains of industry who can't stand to be away from work for more than 15 minutes at a time, he said, you could probably be up and working the next day. He said, you'll be up and walking the same day. He said, if you can tear yourself away, we recommend about 2 weeks of convalescence and 6 weeks before you're back to doing everything you were doing. I said, do I have to have this? He said, it wouldn't be a bad idea, but he said, it's not absolutely necessary. He said, we'll know, he said, and these are his words, he said, we'll know that it's surgery time for you when you start walking down a hallway and all of a sudden you start walking like you've just had a 12-pack of beer. He said, or maybe how I walk when I have a 12-pack of beer. So I knew I was dealing with a real good guy and a smart guy and a very good neurosurgeon. But he said, if you don't want it, you don't have to have it. And he said, frankly, I think we can treat you more conservatively. And so I guess I'm going to go, and some doctor whose name I can't pronounce is going to take x-rays of my, like a real-time x-ray of my spine and stick needles in it. Parte. So that's my adventure at the neurosurgeons. So hooray. What happens now is I just keep on dealing with the pain, and that's about it. He did confirm that no further physical therapy will be of any benefit. And you know, I can eat all the ibuprofen that I can stand. And you know, I'm just a guy over 50 now, and it sounds like somebody dumping out a wheelbarrow full of gravel when I move my neck. Oh well. So yay, no surgery for Bob. And thanks for all the good thoughts as we as I went through. Look, I got to come to terms with this. I'm afraid of doctors. I'm not so much afraid of doctors. I'm afraid of the medical profession. And not so much afraid of the medical profession. I'm afraid of the American medical profession. Tweet coming in from Goldenheart. Boy, he just makes it sound so simple, doesn't he? Nerve blocks? I think that's what we're talking about. And she says, sorry, but I guess, in a way, good news, we get to keep you on the air. Silver lining. Well, it is. I mean, I look at folks who, people, who knows why, but people who say, you know what, Muffy? I think if we took you over to the plastic surgeons, we could probably have those bags under your eyes taken care of, maybe get your chin lifted up a little bit. And so really? Really? You do that? People do that? I've always wanted you to have somewhat larger breast assesses. Really? You do that? You'd let somebody take a knife to you? Really? Because I can't fathom that. So that's my medical adventure, and somewhere along the way, I have to get over my terror of the American medical system. But so far my record remains intact. I was compelled toward a tonsillectomy when I was 4, and thus far, and after that, people with knives in their hands have managed to stay away from me. Cross your fingers. Yeah. No, that's wow, Todd. That's exactly what he said. He said we'd put a little cage in the space instead of an artificial disc. He said we'd put a little cage in there, and he made it. You know, for him, it's all in a day's work. But we did have a fascinating. Fascinating conversation about human evolution. I was considerably reassured because he didn't tell me about how we started having spinal troubles because this is, after all, Prayer Meeting Wednesday, right? He didn't tell me how we started having spinal problems when sin entered the world, when after Eve had that conversation with the gossipy water moccasin and decided to have an apple for lunch. Eat the apple! I was dealing, in other words, with a scientist, which made me feel very, very much better. And so I came away realizing that I had just had an experience of both macro evolution and micro devolution, all in one little moment in a doctor's office. Well, no, okay, Todd. Todd says, except inside the cage, I have cadaver discs. He told me that the bone graft would be made of, like, polished cadaver bone. Fascinating. And you'd be surprised the number of people who have had all this. But so far, I don't gotta. Yay. But it does hurt. But we'll soldier through the pain. Okay. Gail says, no, you're right to be scared, especially with your spinal cord. I just feel bad about your pain. No, don't feel bad. I was pleased not to have it explained to me that we live in a veil of pain, that this is a world of pain, our pain is an illusion, and that the only hope is to be reincarnated as, you know, a sea slug or something. So that, like I said, that's my adventure. Wow, see, I couldn't do that. Dwayne pointing out 8 weeks, no driving. Sorry, forget it. Hey, thank you, Thomas. Thank you very kindly. Thomas just kicked in a contribution so that we can say that at least it was not a completely dry run evening. Thank you, Thomas. Robert in Australia says, sounds like when I had the stents put in, they went in through the wrists twice. Took some downtime after. I'm just glad it's apparently not going to happen. And we'll just... The only thing I'm worried about now is who concocts the stuff that they inject into my spine. Because wasn't there a horrifying story out of, a compounding lab in Massachusetts from a couple of years ago where a bunch of people got, like, E. coli poisoning when they were just going to get nerve block injections? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Having that cup of coffee in law school will make you afraid of the medical profession because you just sit there and read case after case after case after case after case of people, you know, getting butchered. And you hope, and you just hope that if you ever have to roll the dice, it doesn't come up snake eyes. Twenty-eight minutes past the hour, and I did have some prayer meeting Wednesday stuff, but like I said, it feels somehow improper, and I had confirmation of that notion earlier in the evening from Steve in New York City. Early in the program, Steve said, I'm sitting here in my office as folks here are waiting to go to Rock Center to protest, and I hear scores of cop cars. I just would like to give my 2 cents. As much as I like the prayer meeting Wednesday shtick, I'm going to ask that you refrain tonight. The powder keg is lit right in front of our eyes. Yeah. Like I said, it just didn't seem quite right. Let's run over to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
What's up?
It's Bill in Helena, Montana.
I thought so. What's happening, Bill?
Oh, just talk me down, man.
I don't know. You may have to talk me down. I'm not okay.
I am so disheartened by all the shit that's happening that I'm kind of like Tracy. If she wants to go, I'll go with her and let's find someplace, you know. This is...
Well, you're not going to... But Bill, you're not going to find it in the new United States, that's for sure.
Well, Vanuatu. I'm thinking, or something in the South Pacific that's got a little bit of elevation to it.
New Zealand, perhaps. You know, you trade elevation for earthquakes and volcanoes.
Yeah, I prefer the tropical areas, South Pacific. You know, if I don't know, that's where I would like to go in my when I win the lottery, take a windjammer cruise and. To the South Pacific and just get off on an island and say, go on and leave without me.
Yep, I got everything I need right here in my grip.
Exactly.
Costa Rica looks promising from time to time. We used to have listeners in Costa Rica. Maybe we still do.
Well, that's one of the reasons I call. Well, another I don't know. You were talking about human evolution and stuff here just a bit ago.
Yeah.
Did you happen to see the PBS special on the latest research on the Iceman mummy that they found in
I've seen several on that, but I haven't seen anything of late. What have they discovered now?
Well, it's become the mystery of how he died has been solved.
Really?
Somebody shot him with an arrow, and it... clipped an artery, and apparently he bled to death from that artery being clipped, but they took the arrow. They left the arrow point in him, couldn't get it out.
Wow.
And the researchers got it out, and they did a bunch of DNA testing on him. Turns out he had atherosclerosis. He had the coronary artery plaque, and this guy was late Stone Age apparently.
Have they taken the mitochondrial DNA and brought it forward and tried to find any relatives?
No, they were just doing. I don't know what specific DNA they were using, but they did find a marker that he had brown eyes. And he was lactose intolerant.
Well, that would mean that Europeans were lactose intolerant for quite a lot longer than we thought. But then again, well, late Stone Age, was he hunter gatherer or was he from something sedentary?
Well, he was carrying a bow and an arrow and quivers and stuff, and he was walking through the Alps between Italy and Austria, and somebody shot him with the arrow. That's all they know. He was carrying a bronze axe, I think it was bronze, copper maybe, copper axe, which was kind of unusual because...
well, copper is pre-bronze.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's like 5,000 years old. I mean, it was a long, long time ago. But I just thought it was pretty fascinating to see that the arterial plaque, and he was, I don't think he was eating Big Macs every day, you know.
No, but, you know, if you're living in that kind of weather and those kind of conditions, you've got to have fat stores to survive, right? So that kind of,
he was near the glaciers, I guess. He was, that's where they found him.
But I mean, you're still dealing with a European winter. And so that means you've got to have some kind of fat stores.
Well, northern Italy, or I don't know, they said it appeared that he was headed from Italy to Austria, so they thought he was running from something. But I don't know exactly what the culture is over there. I mean,
it's hard to say who. That's why I asked about mitochondrial DNA, because. It's hard to say who his ancestors. It's hard to say who his progeny might be, insofar as Europe being attached to Asia, being as Europe and Asia are actually one big ass continent. You've had mass migrations of humanity back and forth and back and forth and up and down over the millennia, and so who knows.
Well, I just thought it was real interesting, and when you mentioned that walking upright and all that stuff, it just flashed into my mind, so I thought I'd lay that on you. It's it was very interesting. They found some stuff in his stomach. I don't remember what he had to eat, but his stomach was full. And he just lucked out. When he collapsed after he got shot with the arrow, he fell in a little depression between some rocks, and the ice from the glacier covered him up. But apparently, where he was laying kept him from being ground up by the glacier as it moved back and, you know, receded, advanced.
Right.
You know, I find that kind of stuff fascinating.
Oh, I absolutely do. I love it.
I mean, they actually had to thaw him out to do the autopsy, and how they got all the, you know, what they had to go through to thaw him out and be very careful not to, you know, because he could have very easily just fallen apart. And he was,
they built an entire climate-controlled museum for him.
Yeah, and they had to take him out of that climate-controlled box to thaw him out, and then they had to refreeze him and put him back in there. It was interesting as hell. So.
And you said he was about 5 feet. He wasn't a tall guy.
No, very. I mean, it just makes you wonder: have we advanced all that far?
One of the things that happens is when you get a high protein diet, people begin to grow and access to more food. People get generationally taller. So that, for instance, if we assume for a moment that the biblical tale of David and Goliath is true, David was probably about 5'2". Yeshua was probably about 5'2". And Goliath, being a giant, Goliath was probably 6'4", maybe. Or maybe 6'1". Wow. Which would qualify as a giant to somebody who is, you know, 5'2", 5'.
Well, going back to where I'd want to go, I've heard that there are societies in the South Pacific where men of my stature are considered gods.
You got a hankering for deification, do you?
No. It's just I'm so out of shape that who cares, you know? But I guess apparently, large men are revered in Samoa.
That's true. Well, yes, absolutely. In some,
But anyway, one other thing I was going to, you guys, when you and Angry were talking,
yeah.
And I haven't heard it mentioned a whole lot. It's got to do with this immigration thing. There was a very good article written in Truth Out. Do you ever read Truth Out?
Oh, yeah, I do.
It was about the School of the Americas and its dastardly deeds throughout the years. And I got to thinking, well, are these hordes of immigrants, the illegal immigrants, undocumented, whatever they call them, could it be possible they're really refugees?
Hey.
I mean, all the crap that the United States, I mean, it goes back to Honduras and Smedley Butler, for Christ's sake. We've been dicking around down there for years. And
right.
It's all been kind of under the blanket, you know, and I started thinking about the corruption in Mexico and the drug cartels all down there, and the 42 students murdered, and there's more missing apparently, and people are so scared, I think they just want out, man.
Well, what we know about Guatemala, I mean, the child refugees and everything, Guatemala and Honduras, what we know about that is that, you know, between the corruption of the right-wing government that we support, in conjunction with the rise of gangs, makes it intolerable. Now, what's going on in Mexico is finally beginning to be a blip on the radar. I've been reading about it for weeks. You got 42 college students who were on their way from point A to point B, and I think it's and they wound up in a little town called Iguala, which is, I guess, south of the federal district, Mexico City. And the mayor was put off, was just irritated that they were there. So he allegedly called one of his buddies in one of the gangs and said, "Get rid of them." And so one of these drug cartels came along, rounded up the 42 college students and did exactly that. And there is a great deal of unrest. And I think the president of Mexico just may have mentioned it for the first time, in the last couple of days?
I haven't heard, I haven't heard that, but I'm, it sure hasn't been mentioned much, by anybody.
And, I mean, there have been, huge protests and civil unrest in places like Acapulco, the state capital of whatever state it is, Guerrero State. Buildings were burned. But, of course, it didn't happen, it happened in Mexico, so why would the United States, why would the for-profit media even be remotely interested? The only person covering this that I'm aware of in any depth, for some reason or another, MSNBC let Jose Diaz Balart go and cover it live from Mexico, and that's where I saw the video feed coverage that I saw, and then of course I read other stuff online.
Well, this article on Truth Out, it's by a fellow named, hang on, I got it right here. Let me get up to it's a long article, but it really gets down into the nitty gritty. J.P. Sotile, S-O-T-T-I-L-E. I don't know how you pronounce Sotile, I don't know. But he goes into, it's been going on, the School of Americas and the guys that this outfit recruits, and then they send them down there and they get all kinds of, just to overthrow the existing governments and stuff. Guatemala, Honduras, Colombia, El Salvador. The most famous graduate of the School of the Americas is Manuel Noriega.
Oh, of course, yeah, without a doubt.
He graduated 5 times from there. Couldn't get it right the first time, I guess.
Just like Jethro Bodine, graduated 6th grade.
I don't know, man.
No, he went back for the master classes.
Well, look where it got him.
He would probably still be in power had he not crossed the Bush family.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They get down there and they're all, we got some guy named General Efren Rios Montt in Guatemala, accused of genocide, acts of genocide, executions, rape, torture, widespread human rights abuses. Honduras, Policarpo Paz Garcia, class of 59 and 56. He was a two-time graduate. And he is in the School of the Americas Hall of Fame. And that is serious. They actually have a U.S. Army School of the Americas Hall of Fame. You got to read it, Bob. I mean, I think it tells you an awful lot of why these people are all of a sudden in mass.
I think the whole world is just one big pile of tinder waiting for the spark. And it is not going to be a pleasant experience, even in the United States. And we've been particularly fortunate and particularly good at pretending that the conflagrations that engulf the rest of the world don't really touch us. I mean, we got, the worst that the American civilian population had to deal with out of the Second World War was blackout curtains and ration books. and the potential
Japanese.
Well, yes. That goes, it doesn't go without saying, but I'm talking in terms of compared to the civilian populations of, say, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, the civilian population of Nanking, the civilian population of Berlin, of Rotterdam and London, from then forward, the civilian population of Vietnam, the civilian population of Iraq, the civilian population of Afghanistan. See, I still can't get over, because it happened within my own adult lifetime, I cannot get over the fact that a man, George Bush, started an illegal war in Iraq that resulted in the deaths of 1 million civilians. And within the international legal community, he was never brought to answer for any kind of a charge. Or Cheney, or Wolfowitz, or kind of Sleazy Rice, or any of them. They just got
or
away.
Darren Wilson, or any of them. Yeah.
Maybe we need.
That's why I need talking down.
maybe Bill, we need to change the motto on the currency from "In God We Trust" to "We Got Away With It," or "We Get Away With It."
I tell you, with all the stuff that's been happening, Bob, in the last—I mean, just the two grand juries and here in Montana, they got a guy in Missoula who had his garage broken into a couple of times. So,
oh no, I don't know what happened, but we lost Bill. I hate it when that happens. But Bill's right. And by the way, I read an article earlier today from, I think the website's called Resilient, but it was talking about flaws in liberal reasoning about climate change. I saw Sparky in the chat room a little bit ago say I am now a victim of climate change, because during the time that we've been speaking this evening, you've heard Sparky talk about the man cave. Sparky's man cave got flooded from the downpours that have been striking in his area. You know, desperately needed rain, but the creek come all the way up out of its banks and got into Sparky's man cave, and they've got a huge mess to clean up now. But this article that I read said that, and I don't know if I saved it or not, because I need to go back and reconsider it. But it said that liberals and progressives are in some ways as bad as right wingers relative to climate change, because we keep thinking that if we just all we got to do is get out there and build all the wind turbines and put up all the solar panels and everything will be okay. But the person writing this argument said, no, it will not be okay. And kept restating the premise that none of us are truly considering the reality that we are not going to survive climate change as a species without dramatic and drastic changes in the way we live. Stand by. But if you begin to look at what the end of a hydrocarbon economy looks like, it kind of is apocalyptic. I mean, we're just not, I think this article is right. We're just not going to be able, we can't just go, okay, we're going to go from hydrocarbons to renewable energy, but everything else is going to stay the same. It isn't. I suspect it will be a lot more like Firefly than Star Trek. Lottie pointing out in the chat room strengthens my theory that it's too late. It may be. But the question is, even what does too late mean? Too late to go on living like we're living? Yep. It may not be, you know, I saw my grandchildren today on the way home. And I look at their sweet little faces and I'm thinking, man, you know, what is your world going to be? Because, and what are your grandchildren's world going to, what's that? But it's also not a reason to give up. It's a reason to sort of take to look with clear eyes at what's facing us. I mean, I say all this because I'm sitting here looking at the at a news story from a couple of days ago in the New York Times called "Optimism Faces Grave Realities at Climate Talk." You know, there's another climate talk, this one going on, this time in Lima, Peru. And some talk that maybe the historic climate deal between the United States and China will somehow motivate other nations to get serious. My optimism doesn't run that deep. But we have some hard realities coming, and the thing is, and this is why the Pentagon sits around thinking about it. Eventually, those realities are going those hard realities are going to result in some chickens coming home to roost here, the likes of such chickens we have never seen. And to be fair, people of my age, we'll see the front end of it, I think. I think we're already seeing the front end of it. But if you think inequality is bad now, wait until inequality begins to encompass more thoroughly, not that it doesn't already, but encompasses more thoroughly things that even poor people in the first world take for granted, like the lights coming on when you flip the switch. And it's not going to be because that Kenyan Muslim socialist with the deep-seated hatred of white people has shut down all the coal-fired power plants. It's going to be because with an increasingly scarce supply of it, we will probably waste it profligately by putting it on the big boats to China to be burned in power stations there that will in turn power factories that make crap we don't need. In some ways, you can see the proliferation of things like Black Friday as part of an end game. You know, a million times if it's happened once on this program, people have said, why can't the rich figure it out? How much more do they need? Well, the answer to how much more they need is all of it. They want it all because they know probably better than we do, because we in our little working class, middle class, lower class lives, we are caught up in the day-to-day of existence, and maybe something to give us a degree of entertainment, or at least to divert us from our very real, very scary realities. But they know. They got a lot, but they know it's going to take a lot more. It's going to take a lot to keep the Walton family in, behind their gated walls with us and our progeny outside and trying to figure out a way to get in. It's going to take a lot to run the Koch brothers compound of 150, 100 years from now. It may take everything they've got. By the time what's coming gets here, as rich as they are, the Walton heirs and the Koch family and whatever, maybe they may be living like poor people, but by living like poor people, they will be the richest, because the rest of us, they figure, will be destitute. I mean, the hospital I was walking around earlier today is, for where I live, a pretty humongous affair. And just because I'm who I am, I walk around looking at all those lights burning. And I think about what it takes to keep them going. And if you just sort of expand your mind outward, expand outward, please, Bob. If you just expand your mind a little bit into the broader future, you realize that that can't go on forever as long as it's being run on a finite resource, and as long as the technology exists, does not fully exist and is not deployed for making it run on renewables and sustainables. I mean, no matter what country is out there building however many, putting up however many solar panels and however many wind turbines, the bottom line is that something around 1.5% of the world's energy is met by the wind and the sun. And you know what? You can't live like we live on 1.5% of the energy that we use in a world that is absolutely no interest whatsoever in curbing its population. So that's it for this evening. We'll be back tomorrow for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Again, any fundraising help is big fundraising help. Paid some bills in the last couple of days. Got a lot more to pay. I think there's about $1,200 in bills due about now. Any help is big help. Contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com. Who knows what we'll be talking about by tomorrow? Now that I'm gonna jump on the interweb tubes now that the program's over and see what I can find out about what's going on in New York and points elsewhere. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for your ideas, your conversation. Thanks for your emails. Thanks for your participation in the chat room. Thanks for the finances that keep all of this going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Bessie in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACHEACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it is all for you.